The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY with no spaces. And you'll save an additional 20% on these already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout to save big. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, a.k.a. Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. But this week, you might notice...
Oh, man.
There's two windows going on here.
Yes.
Because I am joined by the illustrious, the man, the myth, the legend, one Mr. TK Bay.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Thank you. Welcome.
And we're doing this live. We're doing this for reals in the moment. I've got live chats going on, a very special episode of the SGGQA podcast channel where it is still surprisingly difficult to get two people talking heads streaming to multiple platforms all at the same time. So
yes.
This could go bork at any time.
And we are using something different than what we normally use. So yes, this is it's new to me. I've never used Restream before, so this is interesting. So hopefully it's better than what we had over on Saturday.
The maiden voyage. I mean, again, whether or not it's better or worse, it's just trying to find those different solutions where I like to stream to Twitch. And because this is a special episode, I also want to put it up on the YouTubes, have this conversation as broadly as possible. But, you know, with every live stream these days, it's like you've got to spend the first minute of the stream going, well, a minute before we went live, a bunch of stuff broke.
And that's usually how it goes, right? I was like, oh, can you hear me? Are we getting the right camera? Like for me, per se, my lights are not working today. So the setup is, I mean, it's not bad. It's just...
You look good. You look real good.
You know, through a Sony lens, why not? We could do it.
But we're having a very special conversation this week because TK and I have finally wrapped up our phone swap challenge and we've got a lot of thoughts to share.
Yes.
We did this right in the middle of Techtober. So all kinds of phones and equipment and gadgets that we can kind of relate to our little challenge here at the same time. And because I've got a guest on the show this week, and we've got a very specific focus this week, I want to change up the format of the show. Usually I spend like the first 45 minutes, you know, chatting out news and doing some housekeeping. Instead of that, I'd really just like to put out a plea I run a very politically active, tech politics active kind of conversation. And if you're in the United States, I'm sure you might have noticed that we're leading right up to a crazy election. Mm-hmm. The optics of this are ridiculous. I think we would all agree that the political process in the United States has made us all look very foolish on the world stage. With the kinds of discourse and the kinds of engagement that we're seeing from our elected officials, first of all, from the top down, you know, where the buck stops on down has been not the best look for us over these last couple of months. So whatever your leanings might be, and I know there are a number of people out there that follow me who are probably more, you know, right-leaning or libertarian-leaning, what I would always hope to encourage is a higher level of discourse, especially from those of us who are a bit more tech savvy. It is not okay for us to sit on the sidelines. It is not okay for us to be over politics. It's so unseemly. I just don't get involved because I'm enlightened centrist that never does anything. There are too many situations that are facing our country, that are facing our population, that we need to have the tech savvier people join those conversations. If it's Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, if it's broadband deployment, if it's net neutrality, if it's antitrust investigations, if it's right to repair, we have the knowledge because we're fans of this stuff. And so if we actually know what we're talking about, we need to be a bug in the ear of those that we elect and not letting all of these conversations just go to whoever can throw the most money at our politicians. So whatever your leanings, I would greatly encourage you to be active this political season, this election cycle. Go out and vote. Go put your knowledge to the test. Go put your knowledge to some practical use and be a contributing member of this. Don't be that jerk who sits on the sidelines saying, "Well, I don't do this because nothing ever matters," and then complain when the internet is proper broken by people you don't want completely running the internet.
Absolutely. And keep in mind, there's also early voting. It's not just tomorrow, depending where you are. You know, there's more voting centers, even just in Los Angeles alone, they opened up a lot of pop-up centers. So there's not going to be any concern of delays, long lines. There's more than one way to vote. And, you know, tomorrow may be the day, but you could still do it today. Even you don't have to wait.
Did you do early voting? Because Marie and I already dropped off our ballots.
We got our early ballots, and it was sent back like 3 days after. So we it's been weeks, we tracked it. We made sure it was received. All of that stuff. It's very. I finally appreciate having some technological advancement in tracking our, you know, system of voting that is. You know,
I was getting real angsty about it. I just this morning got my ballot tracker alert. Your ballot is accounted for and will be counted for this election.
Because you're like, I don't want to have, it's like, I don't have to go to vote again. Like, no, yeah, no, I appreciate the process and was very pleased with how simple it was. It was very easy, very to the point, and there was no issues.
Very nice. I'm glad to hear it. And again, yeah. Why I feel simpatico, that we're brothers in arms, that we're comrades in arms here, that just joining this conversation means a lot more than I think a lot of people realize. So
yeah, definitely
be a part of it. Don't be a spectator, because if you're a spectator, the people you don't trust to make decisions on this stuff are going to tell you what's going on. So I'm already seeing an incredible lineup of folks in the live chat.
Absolutely.
I'm already stoked to be jumping into this conversation. In lieu of like housekeeping, where I would normally tell you all the amazing things that I've done, or spending some time like, well, TK, what was your best video out last week? I actually want to take a second. This is becoming one of my favorite yearly traditions. This is Generation 3. This is our third run of our phone swap challenge.
Yes.
Like we did on your show, we did a live stream on TK's channel on Saturday for his Saturday morning with the Side of Tech. Kind of talk us through, TK. we started the phone challenge on one very specific feature, and that seems to be the continuation of what we're going to be doing whenever we decide to pit two phones up against each other.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to say this. We couldn't have chosen a better time. That would be basically the start off of this. We chose Techtober inadvertently and we started it. But because of Techtober, we had an opportunity to spend a little bit more time. So that's partially, I want to start off by saying I appreciated having the longer than originally agreed upon timeline.
Yeah.
Because the Duo as a device is a very, you appreciate it as you use it and you start working with it. And it becomes so natural to work with it because it has a lot of remnants into what you normally use from, let's say, a tablet or even a Windows environment. It brings a little bit of both. It's trying to answer a multitasking tool or basically a product that fits into your multitasking daily life. The challenge originally was we were trying to basically pit two devices that are known for productivity. Both of them are roughly about the same price. The general price point, I don't think, was really the big driver behind it. It was more so to, this is Samsung's, you know, best of the best, which is what people generally look for, the productivity. And just for reference also, guys, we've already kind of done the reverse swap. So you could see I got my phone back and Juan Carlos got his phone back. We had a
Sorry.
And that's how the show turns into things like that. It changes from
instead of Monday morning, it becomes after dark.
After dark. Thank you very much. And we'll see you guys next week. So we did the exchange. We talked a little bit about it yesterday, but the short answer is what we were trying to shoot for was, does Samsung's best multitasking productivity king, you know, a device that commands a price point with all the features that come with it, the S Pen, the large display. We talked about text. We talked about the fact that there are some compromises in the actual, presence of the Note line this year. It's not what we normally see. And then also pitting it to a device that it's a first of its kind. Took a lot longer than it did than people anticipated for it to be coming out. Yes, the Duo,
and it's likely sort of the recycled parts of previous experiments too.
Oh, absolutely,
totally fair. Yeah.
It the amount of time it took for it to come out also adhered to certain things. Maybe the SoC, no 5G in 2020. There's some things also that we kind of looked at, but the core thing that we focused on wasn't that it was running no 5G. It wasn't the cameras. Wasn't the sound. It was truly productivity. Does this fit into what you use on a daily basis as a productivity tool? Multitasking, simultaneously running apps.
Let me jump in, and so we can kind of broadly categorize these devices. I just recently put out a video where I'm really tired of talking about phones as if they're just sort of a price tier. Did you get a flagship or did you get a mid-ranger? Is it entry level or just premium?
Gauging it by the price tag is never the answer, but yes, no, I agree.
And so, I mean, like, we don't talk about that in any other sphere. Like, TK, the vehicle that you drive, is it a flagship vehicle or did you get a mid-range vehicle? Does it have mid-range tires or a flagship transmission? Is that what you got? Flagship engine? Is that what you got? Good. You don't want to get a mid-range engine because then it won't be future-proofed for the next 3 years.
Absolutely.
On a different... So, I mean, like, it's getting a little tired when...
Well, it's also because we're getting... Even if we look at them from the sense of price, we're getting flooded with devices in the same price point that don't perform the same way. And we're getting devices that are in different price points that actually are bringing in some of those experiences. The lines are blurred. It may have been a gauge at one point, but I feel like the price tag is not really driving the experience. They're really, as you're saying, it needs to be more put into categories of what you're looking for. What is it that you're trying to do?
And why I was so anxious about doing this challenge this year is I feel historically the Galaxy Note line has represented one of the first phones that helped us divide phone categories. Mm-hmm. Like taking it back to the original Galaxy Note, every phone was trying to be in this iPhone sphere, smaller screens, one thumb. The Note took us into an almost absurd territory at the time with it being such a massive 5.3-inch display.
I know. We used to call 5.5 phablets. That term died quickly. Yeah.
But the entire term phablet was coined to describe
The Note.
the note was.
Exactly.
And so that was, I really feel that was the split point where we could push into different territories for different functionality. And a phone wasn't just this one thing that Apple made. You know, your thumb goes from here to here. You know, like from there, we started accepting that there were varieties of devices. And we saw other crazy experiments like those cameras, you know, like the K-series, the Galaxy K-series with mm-hmm. the telephoto lens.
Yep.
Microsoft coming out with Lumias at, you know, the Lumia 1020. We started finally, you know, dividing the market based more on what are your needs, what are your wants, and then different types of hardware to satisfy that. So bringing that full circle, the Note to me became the mandatory part of this conversation.
Yes.
We probably could have done this challenge like V60 to Surface Duo or any number of, like some of the Motorola phones that have stylus support now.
For good reference, though, I do have some comments to talk about when it comes to basically V60 as it pertains to both of them. Because I feel like the V60 kind of fits into, if we had to put right. the Duo and the Note 20 on the top part of the V60 fits right in the middle. It, you know, no pun intended with the V, but I would like to actually, if we get a chance a little bit later on, to discuss how does the V60 play around in a realm of multitasking giants?
So, absolutely, for sure. Because when we said, hey, I really felt like price was going to be kind of an important factor. You've got like the Duo, which launched at around $1,400. You had the Note, which launched at around $1,300. Both of them have now had some significant price cuts.
I know, and it hasn't been that long. This is crazy.
The Note 20 yeah. Ultra hit their first sale 2.5 weeks after the launch of the phone. And now Microsoft is also sort of fumbling their price cut with people who recently purchased and are trying to get price protection plans. Like, I don't think either company really did this well for people who were like launch week, pre-order. Yeah, I'm going to get this phone. You're paying the early adopter tax.
Absolutely.
And now that tax is due like weeks after the phone is out. So it's not like, hey, if you wait 6 months, you can get a real good deal on a Note. Now it's like, well, Samsung will probably blink. You can get the phone for like $200 off for no reason. It's not even Friday.
Exactly. Or buy one, get one free, depending on the carrier you're going with. But it's just, It is. And historically, that tax has always carried us a little bit longer. One of the reasons why we were early adopters. At this point, if they continue doing this, they're literally going to basically cannibalize their pre-orders, because people will be like, well, I'll just pick it up on day one or 5 days later and I'll still get it.
So Dave Burns, so basically never buy a phone at launch. I kind of feel at this point, the only people who should buy a phone at launch are the people who would like sport a tech brand like a Louis Vuitton purse or tech reviewers. And anyone else, wait a week. And like in the case of Samsung, it's not like, I'm not exaggerating. It was 2.5 weeks before we saw sale.
The Note 20 dropped the week, I would say almost the week it came out, about a week after it came out. It was ridiculous. One of the reasons why, it bugged me, but I realized, like you said, if I want to get a phone, if I'm getting it a pre-order, I want to be able to get access to it as early as possible. So that I factor the price into it. Thanks for the switch.
Now it kind of looks like I'm looking more towards you. I was like looking way off.
So now I got to look like this. Yes. Okay. I got to switch over because I was doing this before, but you know, we can always switch over.
It was just better for me. It's my show, you know.
Dang it. Okay.
So I want to jump in. This is Phone Swap 3. Phone Swap 1 was our very first Phone Swap challenge was based on cameras. Our second was ultra low budget, like, you know, under $100. And we both tried to shoot for under 50. The joke of that being I got you something that was basically just e-waste in a box and you got me an actual phone that worked.
We went different directions, right? You went with a cheap new phone. I went with a cheap used phone. So it was, I got the price. Both of us kind of played around a little bit loose with the rules, but we had an epic scene where I was I took out a sticker off the back of that phone. Oh my God. If you guys ever have a chance to check out that video, just look at that one part where I'm peeling a sticker off the back, supposed to just remove.
And you ripped the back glass off.
And then we're both car like, what did I just do? And you should see Juan Carlos's face, that open jaw, like, did we just break it? Did, did, what, what, that did you? And I'm like, oh my God.
I mean, to be perfectly frank, I know we went through and we actually talked about like our experiences using
Google. Yeah, yeah.
I kind of feel like we could have summed up that comparison right then and there when the back
could,
of the phone.
We could have ended it right there. TK1, thank you. Move on. Next conversation. This challenge was amazing. Working for a long time. It's like,
but you know, this challenge, we're now polar opposite territory. So we went from the lowest of low budget entry level devices all the way up to now. These are premium tier. And I think
new type of tech too. We didn't just go premium. Yeah, we didn't go in with just saying we're going to the best iPhone to the best Samsung or whatever. No. We also put in a new device that is supposed to basically usher in a new category. I really feel because it solidifies the dual display display functionality.
Oh, it marries you to it.
Yeah. Literally no way of getting out of it. You have to basically jump head first. So I appreciate the fact that we did do that, because the reality is that it's really hard to explain the Duo for if you haven't had a chance to check it out. Right. But I say this honestly, for running multiple applications at the same time, there's very few things that can come close to comparing when it comes to the V series of devices, but it's still not the same. The Duo does it very nicely, and what Microsoft has done. Is you could see all of the work that they've done to basically make it so that it works on top of Android.
So we're going to get into that. One of the things that I want to start this conversation off so that I don't just monologue the whole show, because we know how I like to ramble and soapbox. I'm really glad you started off just kind of naturally. There is such a profound difference in philosophy between the most note.
And I missed the Duo, by the way. I do miss the Duo.
I'm so glad to have it back. but then what Microsoft is trying to accomplish is coming from the perspective of a company that makes some of the best tablets on the market. So what I wanted to start off, and just a kind of a question on your own personal process. Sure. We can very generically say, well, a productivity phone has some kind of hardware that enables business. And for some people, that's a hardware keyboard. For some people, it's a second display. For some people, it's going to be stylus support. Your first impressions going from the Note 20 to the Surface Duo, and now kind of you get to kind of have like a mini second first impressions getting the Note 20 back, because we ran this longer than we really intended to.
It did, and I enjoyed every single second of it. I just want to say that right now. I understand there was some qualms going on Quan's side, and he's been wanting to get the phone back earlier. Hey man, it worked out the whole month. I got a chance to spend with truly, I got a chance to play with it in the real way that I wanted to, as opposed to trying to, even though you cram. Think to, well, yeah, because it is Techtober. That's the thing, right? Our tables were not empty, and it wasn't just these two devices that we were working on. So, and if you guys have seen on both channels, we've covered a lot of different things going on. So using the devices and making sure that they're consistently part of our, testing or usability or testing, that takes some time. And I feel like the month did it right.
So TK Bay picks up a phone, and there's an expectation that this is a phone which is going to enable better business productivity.
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like for TK Bay's daily driver use?
So
what kind of features, support, how do you judge on the apps and services that you use, whether one of these devices would actually enable you to get more work done?
So for me, that there's a few aspects of it that I need on a daily basis. First and foremost is compatibility. It has to have a device, because there's a lot of devices that we get a chance to see on a daily that may not have all the right tools. But for me, realistically, Google services and Microsoft services are a big part of what I do on a daily. So that has to be kind of baked in. So if I'm getting a device and I'm thinking for productivity, that's the first thing I look at. Does it have those type of tools? Does it work with them? So that I can move on to the hardware aspect. Even though I feel like hardware is important, software compatibility is what drives it through. Because at the end of the day, if I get the fastest Lamborghini, but this thing doesn't go anywhere, I can't drive it anywhere because everything is like 10 miles an hour, doesn't help me. So
I feel like, TK, we need to tone down the Apple hate. Okay. So if you can just calm that down, I know they're pro phones. You need to accept that they are the bestest, and it's no one makes Max. Better phones.
It's a Pro Max phone, my friend. Max. Get it right. iPhone 12 Pro Max.
I literally woke up to like to three different DMs from other content creators just going like, okay, so all the iPhone 12 videos are rolling out, and now we're just going to give Apple a bunch of passes on high refresh rate displays, larger camera sensors, smaller batteries, and we're going to justify the price for them. But the Note was too expensive, and the Galaxy S20 was too expensive, and the OnePlus 8 Pro was too expensive, and the Pixel is too expensive. But all of this other stuff that Apple's, that's fine. That's good.
They do it right, because they invent it every single time they release it. I watch their shows to see things invented, because they unveil it. But
of course, leading edge. So sorry,
software has always been a big thing for me.
Saltiness aside. So when because I just want to drill down one step deeper when you're saying like software and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I personally like coming back to a stylus just for fine point control.
That goes into the editing part as well for me. I love editing videos with a pen as opposed to using my finger, especially when it comes down to timeline, expansions, just getting it right and then moving it. Because believe it or not, those few seconds when you're doing a timeline for a long video could add up. So anything we do on the daily to speed things up, and I do it on my PC as well. I get accessories to help things become more efficient. As you were saying, using a fine point pen, either a bamboo pen or even the Microsoft pen, definitely bring it in. And as well as the S Pen, I'm not going to take it away from the Note line, obviously. The S Pen is also a very advanced version of what we've seen in the S Pen. From the sense of what they've introduced this year, we got more gestures. That's literally most of it. I mean, we had gestures last time. Now we just have better UI element integration. But at the end of the day, it's the S Pen, right? So that fine point control, the ability of basically signing PDF documents, those are the business things that we do. And those are like, you can't do that on anything else, right? It just doesn't work.
It's so silly. There used to be a time where I'm like, oh man, I've got to fill out a W-9 because I'm doing freelancer work, or I've got to pull this up because it's for part of a gig, or I'm trying to do production work and I'm signing these contracts. And now, like, I can't look at a PDF on a computer. I have to open it up on a phone, because if I'm going to sign it or I'm going to fill in all these details, like, I need something with a stylus, and I don't keep like a Wacom Art tablet on my desktop PC. So that's mandatory. Like,
oh, absolutely.
And every single contract now goes through some kind of
phone. And I was going to say, for me, that is part of my daily life, right? Contracts, negotiations, different things going on. So signing documents for me is a big part. I do know how frustrating it is for me when I try to do it when I didn't have the Surface, or even when I don't use, let's say, the V60 or even the Note. Yeah. So native support for these things are always going to be a big thing for me. That's why I say software is number one. But the hardware side, I feel like a pen is an integral part of business, or basically productivity level. Pen input to that device. You may not use it all the time, but having that function in there for those specific things, signing documents, editing, precise, actual, like even if you're trying to draw, if you're in graphics design, that level of integration with the pen supports it. And of course, that's where we get into the hardware. You know, it has to have those type of tools. For business, but also for the flexibility of being able to basically multitask and not necessarily have any issues. Let's say I'm wearing gloves. Let's say we're outdoors. Right. My hands are wet. All of those things that could interact differently on our displays.
I just remember like coming back to the Note 3 and the Note 4 era when I'd go visit my folks in Albuquerque. And, the winters, they're not super wet, but they get bitingly cold.
Yep.
And it would be so funny, like, one of the perks of owning a Note was if my finger was too cold to properly register and I didn't want to take my gloves off, well, I could just do my S Pen and I can still control my
phone.
The nerdiest flex for winter smartphone use.
It helped me so many times when I travel to Europe, when I'm in countries where it's super frozen outside, like I cannot take my hands out, just be able to. So yes, absolutely. Pen input. And also one of the other things that I really liked about it, at least on the Note, and I did not test it on yours, I promise, the pen works underwater.
Oh, nice.
Go figure. It's a nice little perk. Not that you'd want to go diving with it, but
we
if you do.
Absolutely chalk that up a victory to the to the Note over the V60 or the Duo, because as soon as those hinges get wet, I would be fairly confident that the Note would survive or those other two phones.
And like I said, it's only because of that was one of the things the first thing I ever did with any of the Samsung phones, because they tout IP68, IP68, you know, you should be able to do it. So I used to do pool testing, and that was one of my favorite features. The ability of not, because you can't use the display underwater, yeah. Right? It's too much, it's initiating too many things, but because of the Wacom display, the S Pen still works. So you're able to basically initiate, you know, change camera modes, take pictures. I was using it mostly just to take videos with my son. So it's fun. If you're in that situation, that very unique 1% of probably, you know, everything else that you're ever going to do with a phone.
So quick, I just want to jump in here before we follow up, because I've got another question here on stylus support. But from Paco with the super chat, I believe it's a super sticker. I'm doing this to restream, so stickers might not work properly, but
yeah, everything looks the same. All I see is YouTube and Twitch, but I don't know what else. Yeah, if there's any of those.
But I do want to say thank you for supporting production. I very much appreciate it, and that's definitely appreciated. So if that's the cup of coffee you're buying me there, I'm definitely going to drink through that cup of coffee. So this was one of the primary things that I think would be kind of interesting for this showdown. Before we even get into the phones themselves, and just one last question about stylus support.
Yeah.
Going from the Note to the Surface Duo, and then also because the V60 gets to exist as that sort of halfway point. It's like, it's almost like an evolutionary halfway point between these two ideas.
Mm-hmm.
How big of a deal do you think it is having larger, more pen-like, this isn't my stylus, having larger, more pen-like styly versus the S Pen, which lives in the Note? So if we're saying that stylus support is mandatory, there is an idea, and I want to be fair to the Note fans out there, because your stylus lives in the phone as opposed to being something else that has to kind of float around in a pocket.
It's always with you. You never really get it. I mean, if you leave it, it'll also give you a nice little notification. I will say that it's a lot better in the just the usability, just from a form factor, to hold a pen that it's the size of a pen, right? There's the normal, we normally use it to be able to, you know, write on papers or so on. Like, so that size always works a little bit better. I feel like from an usability and feature set, I also still feel like the Note still feel, you know, it wins in that aspect because it has a lot more features. But at the end of the day, the question for me, at least what I use on a daily basis, I don't go in and try to create GIFs all the time. I do use the screenshot or the select tool within the Note line to create basically screenshots to be able to share. Mm-hmm. If I'm actually working on a document, I want to be able to grab an image or just things like that, or even just grab an element of my display when I'm helping my mom. That's the number one thing I always try to do, because it's easy to explain to your parent or a friend, you know, okay, well, go in here, click there, down, go from there and do whatever, as opposed to what I do now, or I've done in the past with Milk. I take a screenshot, I draw an arrow, tell her, go click there, step-by-step instructions, and I send it to her over WhatsApp. And so to me, these things are simplistic, but it's an integral tool to what I feel like a pen fits. Having a full-size pen and using, so the Duo, by the way, is compatible with more than just one, right? There's multiple types of pen that you can use with the Duo, so your preference. There's the one that Juan let me borrow, and then there's...
I don't know if I lost TK or if I'm the one who's locked.
It's also
up.
The one that I don't.
Did I freeze on you or did you freeze on me?
I didn't actually see you freeze. We were both going on. I guess I froze, but I didn't know.
Oh, okay. So TK froze on us. Sorry. You were finishing up a point about the different kinds of pens.
Yes.
And that's where I think we kind of locked up there.
Okay. So from a learning perspective, there's no way for me to know if I froze up unless I see the comments. Okay, good.
So it's also, it's good to know that Restream doesn't lock us up equally.
No, but there's no, like, as much as StreamYard bugs me with the whole, you know, circle of death kind of thing, I call it, at least I know we froze in that aspect. I know the point. I can, if I have to go in and take it out. So anyways.
So again, for everyone watching, we're doing it live. This is our maiden voyage.
We're doing it live. Come on.
We'll bugs and things that we'll need to iron out for future streams. But please just, yes. Where you were wrapping up that point.
So the functionality of having multiple options for as far as pens, it makes it into a flexible experience. You're not having to use the pen if you don't need it. And if you do, you have a selection to pick from. Where I feel like with the Note, you're stuck to whatever they give you. There's nothing wrong with it, but I still, even to this day, because they're using it to be housed inside of the phone, it's a very, like, the experience is very small. Like, you have to kind of really pinch to be able to use it. I feel it more natural with the mm-hmm. the Surface Duo. Not to say that the S Pen is not very fully featured. There's a lot of things to be said, but if a personal choice, if I had to pick between the two, I would love to have a phone that has a pen that's slightly bigger, but obviously that's going to be, you know, realistically that won't, no, but I meant to say, like, you know, integrated.
I know.
For it's the portability function, right? Because when you're going out, I'm not going to lie that 9 times out of 10, I didn't take the Duo pen with me. I would just go out with the Duo. But if I know I'm going, you know, if we were traveling for work, if we were traveling for an event or something like that, I would totally bring that little case setup that you sent, you let me borrow. So the keyboard, a small little stand for the actual Duo, and of course the S Pen, Surface Pen, to be able to get that experience to its fullest. So
because again, every different piece of hardware should change our behavior, and mm-hmm. where I'm judging the Duo, I feel very confident about leaving the house with, I mean, a fairly small, it's the size of like a little Moleskine notebook
mm-hmm.
type yeah. device, taking the pen with me and then maybe a little folding Bluetooth keyboard. And the few times that I would take this, like, I just get locked up in my office and I'm enough of an extrovert that, like, I go stir crazy in here. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't even bother taking a stand. I would take this down by the pool and I would just prop it up, you know, in sort of portrait orientation, letting it stand up on its own. And I'd write on my little Bluetooth keyboard down by the pool. And that, like, was just enough to get me some fresh air, some vitamin D, and I wasn't going nuts.
Yeah.
And I felt really good. Like, instead of taking one of my ultra slim laptops out with me to that.
On top of taking your phone, you would be taking that with your phone.
I still have my phone with me. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So that kind of flexibility mattered a lot to me. And one of the reasons why, even though every single spec sheet nerd metric puts the Note well ahead of the Surface Duo, it's
yep.
the form factor actually enabling something that I felt was more convenient, more streamlined, and empowered some mm-hmm. of this additional functionality over something else. I kind of want to break this down because I had some comments in here, and I'm sorry, the chat's going just fast enough where I can't quite pick up on every single individual comment. But
reminds me of Saturday morning chats. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Keep going.
This conversation is amazing. Please keep conversing because we are looking through these. If I'm not, you know, acknowledging every single comment that comes through.
Yeah.
The thing that someone brought up is, hey man, you know, you can look at the Note, but then if you also have a Samsung tablet, you've got cross pen compatibility.
Yep.
And that's very helpful. I feel like Surface should get a similar consideration where the Surface Pen, if you're in the Surface ecosystem, is your compatible pen.
It's, and then the same thing
for V60 is these Wacom bamboos are also active pens, where like the Lenovo version of the active pen tech would mm-hmm. work back and forth between a Lenovo. I believe the LG Grams are the exact same pens.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the LG ecosystem, all of these things kind of carry back and forth so that we at least get multiple use. I kind of feel the LG version of this is likely the broadest. Surface Pen Tech works on Surfaces. Yep, Samsung Pen Tech works on Samsung's. And LG is the one that is going to work with Lenovo's, LG's, and a few of the other pen-enabled Windows computers. Again, kind of meeting in that middle, like you were saying, is like the evolutionary halfway point between what the Duo and the Note are doing. LG manages to kind of, again, sneak in as a dark horse for the most broadly accessible version of both of these ideas.
You made me actually wanted to test out the S Pen that comes with the Tab S7 on the Note, but it doesn't work.
Oh no. It's a different Pentek, really?
The Tab S. So this is, I don't know if you guys have seen, I've done a couple of videos on it. So here, this is the Tab S7. This is the pen that comes with it. It's a, and it is fully charged. I wanted to double check. And it automatically works. So there's like some functional things you could do with it. And, but I never really thought about using the pens separately. So I'll go ahead and switch over. I'm going to go ahead and take the S Pen. And, you know, speaking of which here, let me see. Oh, S Pen works. The S Pen works.
S Pen goes to the Tab, but the Tab's pen doesn't go back to the note.
Yeah, which, so now here's the Tab. Let's go back here, unlock.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
Oh, you know what? I take that back.
Is it working? Okay.
Yep. No, it works now. I don't know why.
Just had to get sort
of. I think I just needed to maybe something to do with me putting it back on the back of the actual Tab S7. So now it works.
It had to know you really meant it. You
yes.
Didn't mean,
no.
Mean it enough before.
No. And I think I just needed to. But, oh, you know, actually, I take that back. I think this is what the problem was here. So if I go home. Okay. So if you have your S Pen in the silo, this pen support doesn't work.
You're kidding me.
It shuts down pen function.
That is kind of silly.
So once I took it out, then I can see the little S Pen option. So now at this point, I can actually do this. But if I put the S Pen back, it disables it. That's what my problem was. Because I was like, I tried it and it didn't work. So here.
It kind of reminds me, like, again, we're just going to talk about how phones aren't price tiers. Like, that's actually a little similar to the Stylo 6.
Oh, okay. So it disables the options.
Does have the same digitizer, so you can use the Wacom, but it doesn't recognize the button presses because the stylus that's in there is actually a very basic capacitive pointer. Mm-hmm. And if you want those menu options, you've got to pull the Stylo pen out.
Exactly.
And then it pulls up the menu.
I think that's what it is. Because I don't, when you take out the S Pen is when the menus automatically come on, it disables any pen input without it. But they do work. You can interchange them. So if you ever lose your S Pen, then this becomes functional. But if you have an S Pen, might as well just stick with the S Pen.
Okay. So let's get it actually into the phones. I mean, again, it's funny, you know, stylus support isn't something that I think a lot of us spend that much time on, but having these all three of these in such close proximity, you know, what the Surface I'm doing is a more basic experience. It's not as well fleshed out as what Samsung is doing. LG doesn't have all of the fun Bluetooth, you know, wireless options and controls, but like the actual pen experience is very close now to what the Note can accomplish. How did you feel, kind of round robining, the Note spec sheet lists this phone as the indomitable, I bounced on that word, I can't say that word correctly, but like the unsurpassable. Every metric that you would care about, from high refresh rate displays to the fastest storage, Samsung manufactures RAM. They're getting RAM right from the source. Mm-hmm. Every piece of this is supposedly completely untouchable. So would you say that with this fully fleshed out spec sheet that you were able to identify points where that kind of horsepower or component advantage was really enabling you to get work done better?
I'll comment on the spec sheet. I don't think the Note 20 Ultra is the best device that Samsung has put out in 2020. And that's going by the spec sheet. And it's also because I played with a lot of their different devices. So I've played with the S20, the S20 Ultra, and as well as the fact that I played with the Note 20 and the Note 20 Ultra. So I have I would say I've had I've experienced what Samsung is trying to offer as their top tier experience. Mm-hmm. I think some of the things in there are good. I think realistically, can I say that I can point to a specific situation where they've helped me? I would say that the S20's fast charging is way better than, and the battery capacity of 5,000 milliampere, in my opinion, is much better than the Note 20 Ultra. Okay. I think the Note 20 Ultra is compromised in battery capacity to that 4,500, as well as the fact that they capped the charging speed to 25. It was a big downer for me. It's like when I upgrade from the S line, historically, I've always anticipated having the best of what Samsung's offering this year. So I would want the 5,000. I would want the 45 watt charging because I've gotten used to it. This is the thing. I'm upgrading. For me, it's supposed to be an upgrade. And I felt more of a lateral, slightly dipped down experience. S Pen functionality, there's nothing to compare with it in 2020. I feel like, yes, this is the best S Pen that Samsung has to offer. And there's no mm-hmm. question about that. The new features that they brought in kind of work for me as a creator when I'm trying to be on my own and I'm trying to sit there and trying to do video and I have my phone away from me. I don't want to have to come back and switch camera lenses right. and switch different aspects. It's cool. Realistically, most of the time as a creator, I'm behind the camera, not in front of it. So to me, from the creating right. type of content, I don't feel like the S Pen really did it for me. Does it? I mean, like, we talk about RAM, storage. I feel like the additional RAM that they did there definitely does help, but it helps Samsung more than it helps me because okay. this is typical to Samsung's UI. Even though One UI is improved and it has done a lot of improvements in the way the footprint is not as, I would say, in your face as TouchWiz used to be. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to be nice. The experience...
Oh, we don't need to be nice to TouchWiz.
No. What I meant to say is it's getting better.
Any criticisms of One UI, but we can bag on TouchWiz.
Since TouchWiz is out there, okay. So well, we know with TouchWiz. No, so to me, the experience gotten a lot better. But I still feel like the reason why we have more RAM is because Samsung needs more room. So the additional RAM definitely helps. The Ultra definitely starts with the right amount of RAM for what you need to do with it, especially if you're trying mm-hmm. to work on it. So short answer is. It does what it's intended. Like, I mean, they're telling you that this is running the latest SoC. That's true. We have 5G. It's true. Latest S Pen, of course. We still don't have that 120 hertz display. They decided to change their approach to the display because they want it to be more adaptive than it to be the ability mm-hmm. basically saying, look, I want to use 120 all the time. Let me have my 120.
Yeah.
No, they chose a more PC approach. If you've ever used a PC, you know how adaptive refresh rate is. So that to me was a little bit of a, so those, that for that specific reason, I still feel like the S20 would be a device I would go with, even with the problems that the S20 has with cameras. When it mm-hmm. comes down to the 108, I would choose the S20 for my choice. If I had to pick one Samsung device for 2020, that for me encompasses the Samsung experience at its best, the Note 20, a little bit hard. But it definitely is a productivity. The S Pen does bring in more productivity functions.
For sure. It has been interesting. I mean, when we start seeing these conversations about, like, for the last couple of years, we've heard the mm-hmm. rumors, like, the S Series is just going to pick up some stylus functionality and they're going to get rid of the Note.
There's some massive rumors for 2021.
But you've been playing with the Fold. Do you think we're now at that point? Like, if Samsung were to pull the Note brand and maybe focus that on foldables, what would they be able to make that play for consumers? Because there's still enough of an entrenched Note user base. Whether or not they're really taking advantage of everything the Note has to offer, there are people that genuinely prefer that brand over the S Series brand. Do you think that Samsung could pull that move off maybe next year, where their second half release of the year isn't another Galaxy S with an S Pen kind of phone?
So hopefully am I still... Am I here?
Yeah, I still see you. Okay, you and me, we can keep talking. I don't know if anyone else.
One of the things that surprised me greatly when you see devices, you hear about them, you see the rumors and so on, but till you get the phone, then you realize like there is something that could have been done here. One thing that I appreciate about the default 2 right now is the fact that the front-facing display is a lot bigger. It's not the right size. I'll say this right. It's not the right size yet. It's still too narrow for what you need, the daily activities, especially because the reality is like, the UI is just like, I mean, it's much, much more narrow. Like here's the Note. I don't know if I can just say this correctly. See, there's a lot of real mm-hmm. estate that you lose when you go to this. Oh, it's functional. We'll do it one more time, just to kind of
show one more time.
One more time for the guy
for the
yeah, exactly. Let me take my text messages out of there. So here, there's a substantial, I would say maybe half an inch, almost extra space that you're losing.
And so you end up with something that's either too skinny to really get stuff done on one side.
There's no,
or it's too wide on the other. You have to open it up, and you have that like the double phone experience.
And for me, I'm not going to lie though, guys, I still appreciate having this display. I was showing this yesterday to Juan when we sat down. I said, well, you know, what do you have the kickstand? Cause I have a kickstand in the back. I like to sit my phone just standing this way. This is the way I like to use my Fold. And I do it 90% when I'm watching streams, like, you know, Juan's stream or across the podcast. I set it up on the table, put my Bluetooth headphones. And to me, that's the big experience. But they so could have put in an S Pen support on this version of the phone by just changing the type of display. It wasn't going to basically make the phone, you know, so much more. But I feel like, yes, combining the Note line with the Fold line makes sense. Are they really going to basically just slash the Note line entirely and just give it to the Fold? That's a $2,000 phone. I don't think so. I think realistically, I would probably see more of a merger with the S and the Note becoming more of a realistic story than it is for the Fold. The Fold and the Z Fold and the Z Fold 2, both foldables, basically the Z Flip, sorry, and the Z Fold are great. Even the Z Fold 3, till they can fix the internal display for it to support 10.
Right.
Yeah, it'll be a nice addition, so you may have it, but I don't think it's replacing the Note. I think the Note line is still strong.
I'll be very interesting to see because, you know, like I just recently did a Lenovo presser where they were showing off their new Flex, and it's a ThinkPad, and they're touting stylus support. And I think you can get away with maybe a slightly thicker gauge of plastic when you're looking at a laptop foldable as opposed to a smartphone or tablet foldable.
Yeah.
But if they're already starting to figure it out, and we sleep on Lenovo, Motorola in the mobile space, but they've been playing with these kinds of concepts, I think, longer than anyone else, at least showing them off in public, where I want to say it was Lenovo World 5 years ago now, where they were showing off their first hinges. And, you know,
Oh, absolutely. The Yoga Books hinges. I mean, I saw them at IFA.
But I mean, like four bendable OLEDs. I don't know you remember, like we would go there. It was the year before the Motomods launch. And they had this glass case. And in the glass case, they were showing all of these, like, well, first it was just bending the OLED. And then also here's the frame that we've been experimenting
on.
And like we could actually play that. You could see it. You couldn't touch it, but you could see it. So speaking of hinges and bending and folding and all this, I think we spent a lot of time on the Note.
Yep.
The Note, I feel, suffers from the highest of expectations and the realities of this market. You have to make more compromises now because people aren't going to consider a Note that has all of the same stuff as a Galaxy S20 Ultra, but then also has an S Pen and a Silo. And the price tag on that would climb even higher, right?
Well, that was the recipe, by the way. That was the Note recipe for some time. This is the first time they've decided to give it a plus version of the SoC. They changed the SoC. But typically in the past, we've always had the Note carry.
In the United States, screw rest of the world.
So in the, everybody else in the world is still getting the, I think it was the Exynos 990, which is a, I personally feel like it's a mistake. I think the Note 20 Ultra could have easily been released with the 865 Plus across the board, because it's not uncommon that you could have made it work in the EU. So it's not, they can't really attribute the 865 not being able to support the bands or something like that.
It's price and regions and whatever manufacturing and distribution and
Because what Samsung did with the Note FE, it's not the Note FE, the S20 FE, is they did release it with two different versions. One that is Exynos and one that is Snapdragon, which to me tells me is that totally possible. This is European hardware that they're selling. They're selling the 865 to support 5G, and then the Exynos 990 supports 4G, which I wish I could understand the rationale behind
it. But I feel it all comes down to Samsung has this enormous parts bin, and they're now in a similar place. I kind of feel like Samsung and Apple are dovetailing each other in these arenas where it's not so much like they've got to make the best phone and then like a lesser than version. It's almost like they're making a pain point phone and then trying to push you up to a more expensive device. Like the Note 20 doesn't make a lot of sense in this price performance comparison feature set, you know, market. I mean, if you're really looking at a Note 20, I would ask like, maybe also look at a V60, which is going to be way less expensive and have some other fun perks that you're not going to get on a Note. And so it almost seems like it exists to push you in a direction where you're going to want to spend more just so that you can kind of keep up with the Joneses. But I, like I said, we've talked a lot about the Note in this because expectations have been so high. The Note name carries so much emotional baggage and has so much momentum. The flip side of this is a phone that's not a phone. It's really not a phone. And it's coming from a player that keeps jumping into and jumping out of the wireless market.
I was going to say, this is them coming back to it, by the way. This is not them starting. So Microsoft definitely, for any Windows mobile fan, definitely.
And like literally, I was an aficionado of Pocket PC back in the day. I've been rocking iPacks since like 2003.
My first smartphone was an MDA running Windows Mobile 5.
Did you ever get the Universal, the swivel? That's my unicorn. I've never gotten my hands on one of those.
No. And sadly,
I want one so bad.
I was entrenched in HTC hardware for the most part, so it was basically...
HTC was the Universal. It was the one that was the clamshell.
No.
And the screen was flippable and like flip back. So
the one I got was the MDA, and then there was the... there was another version of it that came out on AT&T. It was essentially, they all had full-size keyboards inside. So you slide the keyboard, but it was more slide open. So it was kind of like if you open it like this.
Gotcha.
It never came, and it barely did it. Oh, the Tilt. That's what it was.
Yeah.
The tilt. That's what I was like, it tilted. Oh, yeah, that's the name.
So, I mean, one of the first ones I played with was the Blue Angel, and that was, I think it was properly an XDA.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry. We don't need to continuously reinforce just how stinking old I am. Back to what Microsoft is currently doing. It has been my assertion, and I would love to hear your thoughts on this. Mm-hmm. That Microsoft has created an acceptable phone, but has actually sneakily created one of the best Android tablets I've used in many, many years. What would you say your experiences were, especially getting over just the initial first impressions where we're all super stoked about how nice the hinge feels?
It felt as great at day one to day 30 or last day before I handed it over.
Have it back. It's just so nice.
It just, you know how expensive it would be for me to create a Note 20 Ultra that has a hinge that does kind of something like that? It'd be ridiculous.
It's home. But no, seriously,
we're going to give Juan a couple of minutes right now.
I got a case of the vapors there. But no, like all joking aside, once you
as a phone, actually, it works perfectly fine. There is no problem with it as a phone. I'm going to say this. I've done conference calls. I've done calling out with my wife, speakerphone tests, all of those things. They work perfectly fine. There's not a problem. The main thing you want to keep in mind is just understanding what side or what part of the display to use for what you're trying to do. If you're making phone calls, the speakerphone is actually quite loud enough that actually I was able to make it and people were hearing me clearly. I was able to talk to them. There was no problems. And for watching content on it, you watch it on the second display. Do not watch it on the first one because otherwise the speaker's facing away from you.
Right.
And you're not going to get that experience. So once
it's finicky, it is a little finicky.
It forces you
where it's going to do stuff. And that is a little different. It's unfamiliar.
And then it's something that you have to, like, initially when you first read, it's like, what do you mean single speaker? What does that make? You know, and I'm like, hold on, hold your horses, bud. It has a single speaker, but it's really trying to give you, say, look, you want to enjoy content, watch it on the second display, pop it up in a tent mode, still watch it on the second display, and it does the job right. If you want to be able to basically make phone calls, close it, open up the screens, put them back to back, make it flat again, put it on the table, turn on your speakerphone, and guess what? It sounds actually pretty good. So from a phone standpoint, I don't think it made an okay phone. It made it's the same experience as you would get with any other phone from the sense of phone calls, speakerphone experience, and just normal dialer functionality, you know, opening up, doing other things while you're on the call. You can do perfectly the same thing as any other smartphone. When it comes down to the experience from the sense, you do need to appreciate that this is a tablet. This is not, it doesn't look like it, which I think is what people get confused with it, because they see the hinge in the middle and they're like, well, wait, this is two different displays.
Right.
Yeah. The UI doesn't see it as two different displays.
The phone doesn't know that it's dual display, which is the big, like,
which
head
is
trip.
Very different than what V60 does. V60 is trying to make the second display happen, where when you actually use the Duo, if you ever get a chance to connect it to a full display, like an HDMI or anything on it as an external display, you see that it actually mirrors out the whole, both right and left, without a seam in the middle. So to me, that's the thing that you want to appreciate. It is a tablet experience, but it's a tablet experience that's been optimized to run on a phone that has a folding hinge. So that's where running two apps is truly running two apps. It's not a weirdly formatted app that just because, you know, because I was talking to Juan before on it, the Z Fold 2 can run three apps at the same time, technically four if you want to run a floating window. But how many of those are really functional? I mean, realistically, can you really use four apps at the same time? Are we at the level that we're able to multitask to the point where we can actually interact with four things at the same time? It's hard to give us that full attention. Two apps, I feel like, especially because for me, like an example I would say is like researching. I like to look up information. So I want to have the right side as my note-taking app. So I pull out the pen and I start writing. And on the left, I do my research and I flip over. If I'm looking at basically, you know, websites, content, articles, or anything like that.
And let's be honest, it's one screen is very often pinned to GSM Arena. Just
90% of the time, if you ever look at a spec sheet, it automatically comes on. It is.
And three monitors in my office just pulled up GSM Arena.
There you go. For me, those are the things, but like, you know, even when we're looking at other things, I feel like that's the optimal experience. And it is better once you know, that there are options, because when you first open it up there, you know, and I appreciate Juan Carlos letting me know at the beginning, you know, you really should download the beta version of the launcher. You also should really download the beta of the SwiftKey keyboard. It changes things. So it tells you Microsoft is working on the improvements. It just hasn't gone up to the alpha to the main channel.
Catch the subreddit. I know there were a couple like snarky larger YouTuber comments like, oh man, that community over on the Surface Duo subreddit, they're all starting to sound like, you know, the Red phone owners. They're just trying to justify this expensive phone. If you haven't gone through, I mean, first, there's a fair bit of criticism of the Duo on the Surface Duo subreddit. But I was just going to say, but what's been impressive is seeing like, they are aggressively iterating on all of these little launcher betas. So, I mean, if you ever wanted that feeling like a manufacturer really is trying to acknowledge software and improving the software experience, I think Microsoft has kind of lived up to that reputation, even though there are still a couple sticky spots on the Duo for things like orientation awareness.
I still
feel it's fair to say the phone experience, especially when we're saying single screen, when you're using it as a single screen phone, can be a little disorienting, literally, because there are a couple apps that don't recognize how
your
phone.
No, I was going to say, when you went, it popped a picture.
What just happened is I went, this does not know that it's two displays. So it's like if you had a tablet that opened every app in half screen, that other image was in my photo app
as a secondary. Yep.
As the second part of the screen. So when I rotate, it does some spooky things when you're moving the screen around. If you're not prepared for that, it feels like Gremlins and Bugs. But as soon as you understand, like, oh no, this is a wider canvas. And the phone is trying to split it up into different pieces automatically based on how you've bent the hinges. Mm-hmm. It's just an unfamiliar workflow, and you've got to kind of get back into it. The ultimate, I think for me, one of the major takeaways, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this too, because I think this kind of dovetails us back into a comparison against the Note 20. I feel like because Microsoft has focused on a tablet-y kind of canvas, that they're actually one of the more effective manufacturers at supplying a better experience if you want to plug this into another monitor, if you want to plug it into a laptop dock or a Next dock, without having to have a separate DeX mode where this is already, the idea is already, this is a tablet and you can split screen and multitask. You can already work on this like you would a more Windowsy kind of computer. What were your experiences? Because you have a Next dock, I have a Next dock. We love our Next
dock. I tested it out with the so I did test out DeX and obviously and the desktop. Well, the mirroring experience on the Duo for with the Next dock. Absolutely, the ability. So that's what I'm saying is when you connect it to a display, you see the benefit of the, that. You know, both displays or both sides of the screens that you're looking at on the hinge mechanism become one, and you can actually see that there is no seam between them. Everything kind of transitions. Next dock works perfectly with it. Mouse and touch support worked perfectly. There was a little bit of a, I would say maybe boxing of the touch sensitivity, but yeah, that could also be because just, I don't think Microsoft.
No, I'm pretty sure it's the Duo.
It is, but I also feel like it's, I don't think Microsoft was thinking of having this connected to a dock with touch support.
Yeah.
It works perfectly fine. If I'm not using the touch, I have full functionality.
I feel like Microsoft should have asked us because one of the first things we're going to do is plug it into a touchscreen monitor.
Which is actually one of the things why my video came out a little bit later or much later. I've had the Next dock touch for a while. I wanted to test it out with a different set of devices, but you truly appreciate it. So you get that mirroring experience. So you still have the full touch capabilities on the actual device. And then you start basically being able to run multiple apps, go in full screen. You're able to use the mouse and basically do that gesture to be able to full screen an application. Mm-hmm. You can swipe an app from one side of the window to the other. And that's something that Android tablets don't do right now. You don't get the ability. I mean,
they don't do it as well.
I realize that Samsung has the setup where they are enable you to split the screen and you're able to move things, but you don't have a way of throwing an app from one side to the other. You cannot swipe one to from one. You'd have to literally take the app and move it to the left and then bring something back to the other side. So the formatting process, I feel like it's the way you use it on the phone. It works the exact, on the Duo is the way that it works on the Next dock. And that was appreciative. Because you're using the full desktop, you're using the full app. And when you go full screen, you're getting the desktop experience. So very optimized, very, very well thought of. And if you use it on a TV, way better.
Right.
Better. Connect the Bluetooth keyboard and mouse and don't even look at the phone. Just work on it. Just literally work on the desktop.
Now, let's put that into stark contrast where there's another little dark horse dual display phone that kind of keeps sneaking into our conversation.
Yeah.
That experience is so I feel like, you know, V60 and Velvet got a lot of positive buzz after the Surface Duo, especially after the Surface Duo price was revealed. A lot of techies were tripping over themselves to then say, oh, but actually LG has dual displays. But now that there's another company that we can be assured is less popular for our YouTube metrics than LG, now LG can be mentioned positively in videos because we have a comparison point. How would you say these differences in philosophy, a part-time dual display case versus a full-time, you're married to it, dual display hinge device. And again, with the focus of like, you've got to pull up documents. You want to do some research. You want to do some writing. You want to collaborate. You got a Zoom call or a video meeting that you've got to jump into.
Yep.
What would you say those differences in philosophy, how that manifested in you being able to get your work done?
So from a usability, because we've had the V60 for some time and it's a great device. The limitation that the V60 has is that it is a maverick because it doesn't do everything 100%. It has certain limitations in the aspects of what it's doing use. It's a great phone on its own. So if you want to just use it as a phone, you don't want to use a dual case. It works fine. So can it work and work in the same experiment or environment as what the Note works? Absolutely. Take it out of the case, use a bamboo pen, put a good case on it, and it's going to work exactly as you'd expect. It has built-in native support for pen, and it also has application support. So it's not just pen input.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the flexibility that it gets by going dual screen has, when you compare it to the Duo, has some limitations. And I'll start off by saying is the placement of the camera. The placement of the camera is on the heavier side of the phone. If you've ever tried to prop the phone in the level and you want to be able to put it at an angle a little bit more, it just is kind of the mechanism is a little bit hard. And I think what Juan is trying to explain is having it not be symmetrical in weight. It's basically heavy, you know, because the phone is the main, you know, exactly. And the fact that the cameras are on the phone, it was very hard for me to do video calls on it, specifically because the Duo, very solid, and it's weighted. The weight distribution between the two sides is equal. So when you prop it on the second display, and you have the camera facing you, you can put it in whatever does it. And I did a couple of Zoom calls on it. I think was it last weekend or by Friday, and I was super happy. So I like that function. But then you flip it over to the side that the V60 has a headphone jack. The V60 also has, you know, obviously there's the dock mechanism there that you get, which you don't get with either the Note or the Duo. So it does a lot of things. I do feel like, yeah. And then the magnetic connector for the case, it has wireless charging. It works perfectly fine. And it has a massive battery. So there's a lot of things to be said about the V60. I also think the camera system on the V60 is much better, but that wasn't part of the scope of the comparison. But from a productivity sense, is if I'm in a car or I'm in a place where there's a lot of people talking and I want to be able to jump into more of a private experiment talking to somebody on a camera, I think the V60 would do great, but it's that whole, I need something else to prop it open. Right. That to me drove me crazy because it works perfect maybe to this level, but at this point I have to have it much higher and much further away as opposed to me setting up just tilting it.
My hack for that, because it also, I mean, I think it works a little bit better on the Velvet. I think the Velvet dual display hinges are better.
They're better. And also the weight is not as much. The 60 is just heavier. That's the other thing.
Yeah, the V60 is a chunky boy, especially just for the battery. But yeah, it defeats the purpose of dual display. But if you put the screen down, you get a little bit more play to angle that way.
Yeah. Which, exactly, but lose the second display.
You lose the second display. So again, it's
I want the second display. So yeah, no, I know. But I think the V60 approach I feel like it's a right approach from the sense of use the V60 in the way you want to use it.
Yeah.
Out of the box, you're able to pick it up with the case, and the case is not a requirement. You don't have to have it in there. You're not married with it. So you have to basically decide on purpose to say, look, today I'm going to be rocking it with the case. It's going to be a little bit thicker, but it is in the case. I have the nice little display on the front. And if I want to use it all the way out, I can open it up all the way. I can use it slightly in tent mode. There's a lot of different things you could do with it. But if you don't want that, use it in a regular case, bring the bamboo pen with you. You're using it with the pen. You could just still be functional. And that's why I feel like there was like in between the two. Yeah. It wasn't the price point. It was more of the, what can it do? And it fits into both categories to a certain extent with the accessory.
Well, and again, it's little things like if you want a desktop mode, I mean, a specific desktop mode, I feel like you got to go Note. If you're really going to live out of it, the V60's experience means you have to take it out of the dual display case. And then you get a polished up version of the Android desktop mode, which is not as nice.
And which is still not optimized, even with
you've been having a lot more issue just getting it working, like on the NextOx and stuff.
Absolutely. I
feel like there's a very specific fusion dance that you need to do, like reboot into a dual plug with the NextOx on. And if you're standing on one foot, you'll get the desktop mode to fire up the way that it should. But 60 is doing so much custom display manipulation that it's not hard to lock it up. Mm-hmm. It really can be a little flakier for Google not empowering a better desktop mode and LG stretching it to its limits. Mm-hmm. And then you take that all the way to the other extreme where Microsoft probably looked at that and said, nah, we're not even going to mess with it. I mean, I can't even get it to function on the Duo, the Android desktop mode. And the more I use just split screen, I really don't want to. I really wouldn't want to use.
Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey everyone, Adam Dowd here, host of the Benefit of a Dowd podcast. The what now? It's my brand new podcast, and it will be filled with the biggest news of the week, interviews with tech insiders, gadget reviews, featured stories, you name it, I'll do it. No, I mean literally. This is a new thing, so it can be anything we want it to be. So head on over to benefitofadoubt.com to subscribe. That's benefitofadoubt.com, spelled D-O-U-D, to find my written articles and to subscribe. I hope to hear from you soon, and I hope you'll give me the benefit of the doubt.
They've done a really good job with the way the setup is, because the environment is a landscape environment already. It's optimized to be used in that way. The only thing that you need to understand is that you're using it now without the hinge, and you're interacting with that middle section that you typically get covered because of the way the mechanism is. But V60, I think, is truly with the exception. Obviously, we have the wing now. We have the LG, Velvet. All of these devices that we've seen in 2020 from LG are offering us a massive improvement over what we've seen in the past. We see them focusing and improving their experience generation over generation. And the fact that what we see with the V60 at the end of 2020, I still think the V60 is the star of the show. I love the Wing. I love what it does as far as a functional
device. The Wing is so much fun.
It's a fun phone.
But the
Seriously.
V60 is definitely the diesel truck.
Absolutely. Anything you want to do with the V60 can be done, and it can be done right. 4K60 everywhere is the right way for us to go for video. If you're going to be a producer, the video modes, the mics on this thing, as well as the headphone jack. You have a headphone jack, a proper headphone jack that you could use with one of the best DACs on the market. So again, there are things that I can sit here and obviously make why the V60, I would say you should definitely consider. But between the Duo and the Note 20 Ultra, I feel like the V60 is the Maverick. It does things from both ends. And it does them well, but it doesn't do them to the same level.
Yeah.
Like the Pen is not exactly as good as the Note, and the dual screen is not exactly as good as the Duo, but it does a good job.
But it does
both. You can game with it easily.
Oh, and again, that surprisingly was one of the things that I always used to turn to for the Note. Again, there's an idea of top-tier performance. I know we're not really focusing on photography and video and content creation and all that stuff, or gaming, but I like gaming better on the V60 than I do on the Note. And a part of that is being able to customize a controller for a lot of the games that I like to play. We just got an update in Anima, a little dungeon crawler Path of Exile clone. And it's like, I can raid dungeons now in multiplayer, and I'm doing it on a controller, a second screen controller that's perfectly built for my thumbs. I mean, it's like, I can't do that on any other device.
No.
Kind of combining some of these ideas, we've thrown out some snarky barbs, right? iPhones for this and other premium Galaxies for that. And LG, or, woe is LG. Because I kind of feel like the biggest strength of LG is modularity. It's not really one phone. With an accessory purchase, you can make it more the phone that's the right fit for you if you understand what some of the compromises might be against some of these other devices. But I kind of feel, and we've had these conversations offline, the disappointment has been watching tech influencers flex these super premium, ultra expensive devices, but their commentary has not evolved out of a covering the basics kind of review style. And I completely appreciate, did you see that recent survey, like 80% of phone owners think, like there's no change in buying a new phone. I can't remember exactly who put out that survey and what the numbers actually were.
I haven't seen it, but I don't
but
doubt
that,
it.
Yeah. Sharing that consumer sentiment, right? Like, why would I buy this other super premium device? Use my phone for taking a couple casual snapshots and opening up Facebook and getting outraged. That's the same experience I've been satisfying for the last 4 years on this mid-ranger phone from 4 years ago. Because of that, I feel like the Note is unfairly panned.
I wanted to catch that freeze frame. You were frozen for a second with a really good look. Okay, sorry, keep going.
But I feel like the Note is unfairly panned.
Yep.
Because of its high price tag. We're going to give a pass to iPhones. iPhones hit the same price tag, but for whatever reason, that's good. And that's perfectly acceptable for a premium iPhone. And then the Duo gets panned because I'm going to ignore the radical engineering and just focus on a chipset that is still radically overpowered for what people can really do.
Anything that you want to do in 2020, absolutely. The 855 is way more than capable. It's not even at the level where you're even getting close to overpowering it or even hitting the limits of what this processor can do.
We have these editorials like, was it Android Police? Like, there's no reason for you to buy a premium chipset anymore. These mid-ranger chipsets are good enough. And in the same breath, we've got specs nerds going, but 855 is underpowered and it's too old and it's too sluggish. And like the A55 stomps the crap out of the 765. And if you're not even maxing out the 765, you can sit down. you can take a little time out, like I would tell my 5-year-old daughter. So
you got me choked up, man. Yeah. I was trying to crack up a smile at the same time as trying to take it to
cheek. I said Snapdragon 855, and it's so old and gross that you instinctively tried to vomit in your mouth, right? Because I mean, can it even boot Android anymore? Right?
No, I don't even think it could. It powers no. 855 is just old enough to barely even turn on a light. If you wanted to turn on a light with a phone that ran it, actually, surprisingly enough, even if you think about it. XDA partnered on a phone with an 835.
Yeah. We're going to hit some fun dropouts here because right now your video's frozen with you like the most sleepiest stoner eyes I think I've ever seen. give you a second to kind of catch your breath there.
I was going to say you should have seen the look on the one you had. So we should watch the show.
This is going to be great going back to rewatch these. Restream is actually doing a pretty good job considering what we're throwing at it in real time here. But what I want to get back to, again, all snarkiness aside. No, not all snarkiness aside. I feel we have completely let consumers down with a conversation focused on price and fashion. Yep. And as techies, we should know better. So out of these different phones, how do you feel they should be judged against the manufacturer's claims? Microsoft called their foldable a Surface. That means something.
Something, yeah.
the Note has historically been a crown jewel wrapping up the year technology showcase for Samsung. Yep. Mm-hmm. And LG is sending off the V series with the V60. This is the last year of it being called a V. You know, we're not expecting the next thing is like codename Rainbow or something like that.
Well, it's the evolutionary sign. But yes, no, the G series is gone and the V series is literally kind of at the same level. So
let's start with the Surface.
OK,
you call something a Surface. Do you feel that Microsoft has delivered the goods on something that can replicate the Surface experience for someone who's into that kind of an ecosystem?
Absolutely, without a doubt. When I use the Duo, I feel like I'm using a Surface on an Android device. A lot of the same elements, the size, the design, the cross compatibility with pens, the native integration of Microsoft tools that you know the moment you're setting up your device. This is, by the way, the only phone that you can get that when you're setting up your phone, you not only log into your Gmail, but you log into your Microsoft account. It's part of the setup. Yeah. It knows this is trying to go in as a Surface. So to me, yeah, absolutely. Coming from a Surface PC, using a PC as a Surface, which just for reference for a lot of Surface or non-Surface users, the Surface is known for being a detachable display. The whole computer is running in the display. You detach it to use it in tablet mode, and that runs Windows. This is running Android, and it brings those elements in. And I feel like it did an amazing job just giving us that experience. I think what I would have loved to see maybe something is more of a dock option to be able to kind of replicate that experience with maybe an external display or something to that effect. But to me, when you compare the two, you know that this is the same lineage, the same team. They're using similar tools. And my hope essentially is that they would just be able to push out some more updates. I think since we've gotten it, there's been one major update, and there was initially like a bug fix.
There was the initial embargo update, fixed a ton. And again, I still feel a bunch of influencers, not the people that really review, but people that just like to flex shiny gadgets. I saw so much B-roll from people like, well, and this is what the phone was like before the update, and didn't shoot video of it after the update, which
because
that's hard work.
There's a little bit of both. There's a little bit on both. Yes. they were trying to meet that whole deadline, meeting the time kind of thing.
And again, but I think that's on Microsoft for making that a clumsy launch, but you can't hold yourself to some kind of review or editorial standard if you're going to complain about something that doesn't exist.
Or at least put a follow through article or something to that effect, something to reflect the, now, you know, this is where the new things are. But yeah.
Now, the flip side of this conversation, Galaxy Note 20 Ultra is the most note-like note Samsung can make this year. Yes. It's a more traditional slab. Does it still fulfill that tech showcase that Samsung is known for with this tier of device?
It meets the note requirements to a T. That's where I'll start. If you're looking for the note and you're looking for the best note, this is the best note. The Note 20 Ultra, not the 20, is the best note that you can get. Is it meeting the expectations that I was expecting out of a smartphone, meaning that the top tier phone from Samsung in 2020? I think it's a little bit of it's a yes and no. I can't really say yes 100% because there are some compromises. They compromised on a few things on this device. I mean, they already knew they were going to go. Yeah, no. I mean, say they were going with a large display anyways, right? They weren't trying to make a small phone. The Note has never been known as a slim, small device. So they've always, I mean, if they wanted to go a little bit thicker to get a bigger battery, they could have. But they chose the design and they chose the compromises in the sense of what they've done. So for anybody that's ever used a device from Samsung before, like an S line or even earlier generations of Note, you'll see that there's some different philosophies in here. They didn't adapt the fastest charging. They didn't adapt the largest battery. They added a laser autofocusing system to improve the camera experience, but it doesn't really fix it to the point where it becomes like, okay, this is what we've seen in the past.
The autofocus is still spooky on the Note.
That's why I kind of said, like, if I had to choose between the S20 Ultra and the Note 20 Ultra in 2020 for Samsung, I would still go with the S20. Not that I don't like the S Pen, but at the end of the day, it's just, you know, for what
battery
I use
and
it,
charging.
Battery and charging.
They don't walk back. I mean, again, it's kind of silly, but like even the telephoto camera sensor is a cost savings on a $1,300 phone.
And both were expensive. Yeah, there's no question.
And so I kind of want to put that up. Our dark horse, and again, it's not the phone that I think wins. It's not a conversation of winning or losing. It's picking the right pros and cons, right? Can you live with some of these compromises? And then if you can, then you end up with a device that maybe better fits your specific workflow. If we match a V60 to the Duo and the Note, that means you're getting a phone with the dual display. You have enough money to pick up full retail a Wacom active stylus. You can budget for an ultra fast 256 gig SD card that can shoot 8K video in HEVC with HDR. And you probably still have enough money left over for a decent pair of cabled earbuds to really play with the LG Quad DAC. And I think you'd still end up saving money over the Duo and the Note 20 Ultra.
I agree. Yeah, no. And LG's done, like I said, this is, it's like if there's an epic version of a device, this is what I would imagine. That I mentioned this with you on Saturday when we were sitting during the press briefing of one of the last few times Juan and I had a chance to hang out together in person without masks. I have to remember the good days, man. This year has kind of gone like
we just met up at a Starbucks parking lot so that we could trade the phones back and I bought you a cup of coffee and we're still.
Thank
it's
you,
outdoors,
sir.
Sitting at a table, but there's so much foot traffic around us that both of us were like, I'm not trying to be rude. I don't think you're filthy, but I'm going to keep my mask on.
Yeah, no.
All these people on a Sunday morning.
It was fun. We got a chance to finally meet up with it, and I made up for my big kibbutz on Saturday.
We don't even need to get into that. It's okay.
But In that press briefing that we sat down, I seriously, guys, I swear to God that I had a, as they were going through the things that they've changed in the V series, I was super excited. those are the things I've always wanted out of an LG. So I feel like the LG V60 to me, again, nothing against the Velvet. I feel like the Velvet does a really good job of minimizing the footprint and but still kind of holding the same essence of the V series. It doesn't hold the same level of everything, as you can imagine. It's a 7 series processor.
It's fair to say, I mean, we've seen some comments in here. I mean, the Note 20 is a chonk. And it's not that pretty. My daughter continuously steals my V60 to put stickers on it because, Daddy, your phone is plain and it needs to be prettier. And I go for it. So I've had superhero stickers on there. I've had unicorn stickers on there.
I love it. I love it. Yeah.
And she's not wrong.
No.
There's no one arguing that the V60 is. I don't think the Note
will not win any fashion awards. I don't really think that that's the intention.
Although, tell me that the second you show this off, the Duo just drops jaws. No one says anything about the bezels. As soon as you put this in someone's hand, it's like.
And you're like, are you opening a book? What are you doing? And then they look at it and it's an actual phone. So to me, one of the reasons why I didn't put a bumper case on it and one of the reasons I didn't want to put anything on it, I wanted to actually experience it in the way it was meant to be used. So I think the V60 has a lot to offer. I think that from the sense of if you're looking for productivity, all three of these devices will do productivity in a slightly different way.
For sure.
I do want to mention, and I do want to, because I saw a few of the comments as well, is now we're talking productivity on device, but when it comes to secondary display, if we have to really kind of put head to head, although I appreciate what Duo does with the desktop experience, Dex is still something that you have to also appreciate what Samsung's been doing and improving on it. For sure. It is definitely it's a very different wildcard. Like it's almost like you can't really compare them because you can do mirroring on the Note and you can still use it in that and change the orientation. And at that point, the Duo definitely is a much better experience, but turn Dex on, then the Note 20 kind of moves on. But
I'm glad you said that actually takes me into sort of, I think, what our good wrap up point is. I'd like to save the end of this. We can save a little time at the end of this conversation just to kind of wrap up 2020 now that we're finally through Techtober.
I was going to say that too.
So kind of closing out this challenge. We're both of the mind that there are no winners and losers. Right. I know there are people in here that use V60s. I know there are people in here that use Note 20s. And I know Sam is watching and he likes his Surface Duo. So there's at least one person in here who bought a Surface Duo with their own money. I don't know if there are any other people in here that are using the Surface Duo. It might just be me and Sam. The second I see an influencer talk about average consumers while they're showing off $1,000 plus devices, I'm pretty confident I can unsubscribe from their channel. Mm-hmm. Average consumers buy average phones. And phones that start trekking north of $500 or $600 better have specific reasons why they have features that you can utilize to their fullest. Pick up a Pixel 4a, pick up an iPhone SE, pick up an iPhone 12, pick up a Pixel 5. You're covering that amazingly well, $700 and down. And really, the basics, $400 and down. There is no reason to shop up more. When I'm looking at productivity phones, one of my major sticking points, and I'm going to get angry if someone is like, well, this is a phone that I can get work done on, I need to know that I can leave other gadgets at home. And so,
absolutely,
Duo, as a tablet form factor, it's a $1,300. I mean, not anymore. Now there's the price cut, which is going to go through this month. But I think it will go back up to full price after November. So if you're thinking about getting a Duo, now would be the right time to do it. I feel super confident leaving my $2,000 gaming laptop at home and really being able to work in a very high productivity focused way on a phone. If the conversation for the Note is Dex.
Yes.
You get your $1,300 Note, you get a $300 Next Dock, and that's $1,600, right? So that's no small chunk of change. I am not trying to minimize. That is a premium purchase that you have to plan out. But I would feel very confident taking my Note 20 Ultra and a Next Dock and leaving my $2,000 gaming laptop at home and $1,500 worth of camera at home, and still being able to produce an incredibly high tier of 4K video out in the field. I would feel good doing that. Mm-hmm. So I don't get this conversation where it's like, oh, Sony cameras are so hard, but I use a Sony A7 for my videos and I need to have this phone, but I'm still going to use a laptop to get some of the heavier lifting done. And you're like, I don't want to travel with a $1,000 phone, a $2,000 laptop, and $2,000 worth of camera gear. My phone should be able to do that. And so if that's the conversation, that's where I feel the Note absolutely still kicks ass. Mm-hmm. My $1,600 purchase means that I get to leave $4,000 worth of other gear at home. And absolutely, I don't feel compromised for getting my work done.
No.
And that to me is, now if a productivity phone can't do something like that, then that's where I feel they failed.
I agree. And I think there's a lot to be said that the next stock can bring in as a conversation, not just for the Note. I mean, even if you went with a Note 20, or even if you went with an S20, the beauty of DeX is, I think Samsung has done mass amount of improvements into it. I feel like on their tab line, they've allowed DeX to run as the native OS, as the native interface. So you are able to initiate DeX on the tab mm-hmm. S7 Plus and use it. So you can switch between standard Android and tablet mode.
Yeah, but I'm not sold on this idea. In fact, it makes me cranky angry because mm-hmm. I don't have the $1,600 worth of Samsung ecosystem to offer. I'm not impressed. Oh, DeX can run on another computer? What's the point?
To use
the computer that's in your pocket. And so this is where I'm so angry, because Samsung has an incredible laptop and tablet division, mm-hmm. and they won't give us the piece of hardware that properly, that really does fulfill the promise of DeX. So we're sitting here talking about next docs. I mean, we're talking about practice, not the game. We're talking about practice. Where is the Samsung solution that really empowers one of the best, most underrated features of the Note? And why doesn't Samsung offer that? And I'd pay the premium. So let's say it's not a $300 next dock. It's a $500 Samsung dock. Fine. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Now it's an $1,800 purchase. It's still a monster productivity workhorse offering from Samsung with that kind of componentry and ecosystem tie-in. And then your Galaxy Watch will communicate with all of it, and your mm-hmm. Galaxy Beans are playing back and forth. You would have the real Samsung on-the-go experience. And there are consumers out there who work on web services, who work on network services, who VPN mm-hmm. or Telnet into IT departments. You don't need another computer if your 5G-enabled phone can better make use of a laptop clamshell form factor. Absolutely. And that's the thing that kills me, is I want to put the Note up as this, like, that really is where the Note lives, as mm-hmm. an untouchable experience. But Samsung won't give me the one piece of hardware that fulfills that experience. I got to go look elsewhere for accessories, because Samsung wants me to buy a phone and a tablet and a laptop. They don't want to eat into their other
one ecosystem over to the other. I totally agree. I feel like they could have totally done this many, many years ago. It's not something new. The idea is not new. This is actually the third iteration of a next stock, not the second iteration of next stock. So it's mm-hmm. not brand new. This is the next stock touch, which is the successor to the next stock two, which of course is, you know, you could follow. But what I meant to say is, there are things in there that obviously DeX needs to be worked on. So for the current mm-hmm. version of what we get with DeX on the Note 20 Ultra, I feel like it's a great companion, and it does offer some experience. It's hindered by the way we interact with it. Connecting DeX wirelessly right now to a display, and then you're running a keyboard and mouse, is functional. You're, you know, 1080p limited. Connecting it wired into a next dock is the ultimate experience, because not only are you charging your phone, you get all of the functionalities, and you still have the ability of running apps on your phone by clipping it to the side.
So the only thing Samsung's missing is HS power control on a Sony.
Absolutely.
Which would help the charging, and you could just let the next dock would just power the phone and not recharge its battery. You would have, I know I make these claims, mm-hmm. but if you really try and performance test against expensive PCs. You know, I've got my Nook. I've got a Core i9 Nook with a GTX 1660 Super, 32 gigs of RAM, really fast NVMe drives. That little mini small form factor PC is roughly $2,700 worth of computer before software. And so then I run DaVinci Studio on it, and it beats my V60 in video rendering by a little bit. By an an unreasonable margin. Like, I have to edit my on-the-go videos on a $3,000 workstation or gaming laptop. If you really compare video quality to video quality, and you can compromise on a few of the more extreme video editing, motion graphics, types of plugins, our phones are beating consumer grade laptops in that $1,000 price point, in that $1,000 territory. And again, they're running up against mobile gaming solutions with dedicated GPUs. Like, they're neck and neck, and you always have your phone on you.
Absolutely.
You always have it there. So then when you take that and you have that premium version of that with something like DeX, that to me becomes like, that is a not only viable, but it could be an even better solution for someone who doesn't. I mean, if you're looking to save money, if you're looking to save money, instead of buying like a $700 or $800 phone and like a $1,200 laptop, get your Note, get a Next Dock, and then every time you upgrade your phone, your Next Dock gets more powerful. Like, it becomes even better.
That's the genius part of the Next Dock. It's that it is literally dependent on what you're connecting to it. And as long as you're running whatever you want to run as a smartphone, you'll get the same benefit. And the connectivity too. You don't lose that connectivity. You're getting the Wi-Fi, you're getting the F5G, you're getting the Bluetooth, you're getting the and you gain SD card support, and you gain a headphone jack, and you gain a full USB type A connectivity, as well as the speakers now are much better, and touch support. So there's a lot to be said. The Next Dock seriously is a definite go for anybody that's looking to get the full potential.
Let's go ahead and put a pin in this so that we can spend like the last 20 minutes just kind of a little loose 2020 recap. And if anyone has questions or anything about all of the ridiculous number of phones that we've been playing with, please feel free to drop them in the comments here. But our challenge, we at least want to come to some kind of conclusion now that we have the individual phones back.
Yeah.
Your Note 20 is going to be going to your wife. Like, that's the phone she wants to rock.
So it was originally, so the original thought behind the process was I was going to get the 20 Ultra and she was getting the Note 20. Right before we were going to do the challenge, I was done with my coverage on the Note 20. I was going to just keep, if I was going to do anything for Note related videos, I was just going to go with the Ultra. And then I was ready to transfer her information in there and put things in there. And then I realized that I didn't have enough storage. So short answer, the Note 20 did not fit the bill. There was no, even though there was originally announced, or there is an option on the site for the 256, that device did not materialize. It's not available in our area. So the decision has been made that I would just go ahead and, the Note 20 Ultra is going to be going to my wife. And if I ever do need any B-roll or any kind of shots on the Note 20, it'll be like, honey. Yeah. But we did the same thing. So she's going to be upgrading from the Note 10 to the Note 20 Ultra, which I feel like is a good upgrade from that device to what this.
Especially going Note 10 to Note 20 Ultra.
Yeah, because she didn't go with the Note 10 Plus. Yeah, that's a much bigger, there's SD support, bigger display, QHD resolution, SD card, a whole bunch of
things. And the Zoom camera is fun to play with, even if it's not quite as dramatic as the S20 Ultra.
She actually likes the gestures too, which is nice.
That's good. Again, that's the right fit for someone who's been in that S Pen ecosystem. So productivity. The main showdown, again, keeping price point to price point, we were kind of focusing on Duo to Note 20 Ultra. You're not keeping either. Which one would you say you're probably going to miss more, Note 20 Ultra or the Surface Duo?
I'm not going to say I hate to say this. I will miss the Duo more, a lot more. We see so much hardware. We see so much tech in an average year that it takes a lot for something to give you that excitement. that mm-hmm. that certain things that kind of leaves it in the back of your mind. It's like, what is it that you remember about it? The Duo does that. It does have that excitement factor. And I didn't feel like the excitement factor died after 30 days. You know what I mean? There's the initial first 2 weeks, I call it like the honeymoon phase, right? Right. You're so in love with the hardware and what it can do. You discount some issues and whatever. But after the 2 weeks, you start, obviously, you know, you're married to it. There's no more return policy. You're pretty much in it for the good, for the long way. I feel like the Duo did for me a much better experience overall. The S Pen, and it could just be because I'm not a heavy, you know, gestures and so on. I like having pen input and I like using it, but it's mostly for business related concerns. It's not for drawing. I'm not going to say I'm a graphic artist. My wife likes to draw with the S Pen. She right. uses the S Pen truly for what it more than what I use it for. So for me, when it came down to it, I would much rather stick with the S20 Ultra than with the Note 20 Ultra. So, and again, like I said, from a B-roll type of standpoint, having her carry the Note 20 Ultra also makes sure that if I do need any kind of comparison shots, it's there, it's available. Sure. I think if I had to pick between the two and go down and buy a device, I would pick up the Duo. The Duo for me I don't know how to explain it. It did it better. It was more intuitive. And maybe because I use both Windows and Mac just for reference for desktop experience, but to me it was still more native to that. I felt like that experience from multitasking the way I want it to happen on device with gestures, the Duo did it better. The Note 20 is a powerful device and it has a lot of possibilities, but on device, I felt like the Duo did better.
I have to second that. It's not just being the contrarian, and I think people who watch or listen to my commentary probably understand like some of my personal feelings about Samsung. Mm-hmm. But that's got to be bridged by the fact that I was the Note guy.
Absolutely! You still have your first Note. I'm like, dude,
over here. I'm
rocking like a Note.
Back down to like my Note 1. You know, like these were the phones that
the Note,
the Note.
Yeah.
Again, with this, who could ever use such a large 5.3 inch display? It's just comically way too big. But to kind of like, you know, mirror some of your experiences there. If we're concerned about premium tier devices and we're concerned about a landscape of phones that are feeling too samey, mm-hmm. and even down into some of the more obnoxious, like how Samsung gets a pass for making fun of Apple 1 year and then immediately copying them the next year. Like down to things like why do you need to change the long press on the power button on the Note?
They changed it on everything. They changed it on all of them.
But that's what I mean is like, why do you need to make fun of Apple and then copy the terrible way that Apple sets up how to power the phone off.
Ever since the iPhone X, they changed it because though, yeah.
But not okay. And again, like this has been Samsung's MO there, like since like what the Galaxy S3 is. What did Apple do? Okay, cool. We'll do something just like it because Apple made a lot of money and we can copy them too. And the Note used to feel like it stood apart from that a little bit because mm-hmm. what Apple phone had stylus support, right? You know, couldn't be more different.
They're still holding the crown for that, by the way. A lot of other devices support stylus, but not in the way Samsung has done it. But yeah,
totally. And is refined because again, it's a decade of Note versus the first generation of Surface Duo. So I mean, we should expect some advantage for Samsung in that arena. But wrapping up my time with the Note, I never leaned on it in the way that I felt I could drive multiple experiences on the Duo. And even performance testing, like really trying to find those specific applications that would benefit from the extra horsepower on the Note, very limited. I mean, like we're talking like a significant advantage using the video stabilization plugin in Google Photos.
Yeah.
So if you do that a lot, you should get a Note because that's the only thing I found where it genuinely was the fastest by any appreciable margin. Video rendering.
Mm-hmm.
Video rendering, V60 beat it. And there was actually one transcoding test where the Duo beat the Note in transcoding a longer piece of video. Like these spec sheet junkies, that conversation is so woefully incomplete when you look at what the whole feel of a phone should resemble. And Samsung is also, I think they're their own worst enemy in a lot of those ways, where whatever performance advantages might be there are probably eaten up by the insane amount of custom code that runs on top of Android to make a Galaxy work.
Hence why they need more RAM. But yes.
So the actual like Duo versus Note part of this conversation, for really trying to multitask, to get business grade, communications grade, or document grade work done in the field, I have to side with you. I feel like the Duo is the better in the hand solution for that. But if you can sport some accessories, the Note will win if you're looking at expanding the role of your phone to replace a proper computer. And that's where this arena gets very interesting. Again, now to throw the wrench into the gears is the dark horse, where you just get so much more stuff for the same price if you're shopping something like a V60 in between the experiences on the Duo. And the
Note. If you go into a retail store and you look at all three of these devices and you really get a representative that's truly knowledgeable of all three ecosystems and how they work, not necessarily just saying you want a Samsung or you want a Microsoft or you want an LG kind of a conversation.
Right.
I think there is a good chance that a consumer would probably go with the V60 over one of the other two, mostly because that could be a budget constraint, as you said. When you're going into a smartphone purchase at a store, there's a lot of different factors that play into it. But when you go in and you see the three different areas, now, sadly, no one store carries all three of these devices because...
Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. And also, I mean, it's the whole issue with the Note. I mean, not the Note, the Duo. Being sort of tied up by Microsoft and being much more of a specialty and a niche.
You froze on a really good look as well. So
yes. I, like you too, and you had your kind of hands up there too. But
I'm sorry.
It's interesting. Like to me, I think the bigger problem just becomes one of branding and marketing. If it were really a rational decision where I'm weighing the pros and cons and looking at my wallet and what kind of features I care about the most, I think our landscape would look really different. We wouldn't have 80% market dominance by Apple and Samsung. That's an emotional market. That is not reflective of the real pros and cons of all these different devices. Just the two companies that spend the most on advertising. What a big surprise. They're the two companies that are most generally consumer popular.
They keep themselves dead centered in front of our faces all the time. That's, I think, what they're doing. But like I said, at the end, the V60, I think, would be, I'm not to try to take away from either, but if I'm recommending something like this to another person that's looking for a very capable device that can do different options depending on how they want to build that experience, I would recommend the V60 easily. I don't have any issues with it. I think my only qualms with V60 line this year is the fact that we don't have a V60 that's unlocked. Yeah. The carrier, this limitation that we got in this year is that it was limited to specific carriers. It's limited in, I think, in the US. I don't even think it's available outside. So to me, those are the things I felt like LG could have capitalized on it because it's such a good device. I mean, so much time has passed, we should have at some point an unlocked version of the V60 available, because it still rocks. So yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it's the realities of LG's position in the market. I mean, LG, you know, what's funny is LG's customer is not you, the end user.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. That's
LG's
true.
Customer is the carrier, because the carrier is going to guarantee a certain number of phones are sold. And so LG knows how many phones to make, and they aren't having phones sitting on store shelves. Yeah. So again, LG is there in their way of this whole year has been a pivot for LG to maximize, you know, potential profits and try and reduce the losses. I mean, their phone division is still generating a loss, but it's been better this year than it has been in years past.
Yep.
It's a different, I mean, you have to think about LG as being a seller to carriers, and then the carriers sell to the end user. So there probably won't be a strong push for current unlocked phones in the next year or two of this 5G rollout, because LG just can't afford to have these phones sitting on store shelves and then being sold at ridiculous, I mean, just ridiculous, you know, price savings, like they used to. Like, yeah. if you slept on the G8, you missed out on a really great phone, and the unlocked version of that phone sold stupid cheap, but LG can't afford to keep doing that. So yeah. I want to use this to kind of transition out. I feel like we're kind of simpatico. There's a flexibility to the V60 where I think it can fit more individual niches. And mm-hmm. does so with a slightly less wallet destroying first impression. Mm-hmm. Duo to me becomes the more productivity focused option for a phone or a tablet out in the field. And the Note 20 represents more raw potential, but you need to search for the accessories that are really going to maximize that potential. Closing this out, in 2020, we've been through OnePluses, we've been through gaming phones, we've been through, you know, we played with some iPhones, even if we, you know, aren't running the same kind of coverage like we usually have. Samsungs, LGs, I'm trying to think, TCLs.
I was going
to
say TCL was kind of a big, yeah, absolutely. They had a massive, I'm very happy to see that they released all three of their 10 series in the US. So that was...
I don't think anyone would, I don't need to gild this.
And Pixels. Let's not forget Pixels.
and the Pixels. Yes, please. Thank you. As opposed to last year, where I feel like I kind of split my time a bit more evenly between the G8 and the V50, but the Pixel 4 XL actually managed to keep my SIM card consistently the longest.
Same here.
I don't think anyone would be surprised to hear me say that this year, the V60 was the phone that kept my SIM card the longest in between all of my other review devices. Which phone do you think you kind of lived with more than just it being the review week that you needed to test like radio performance?
So the device that's carried my SIM card the longest in 2020 was it's a toss up between the S20 Ultra and the Find X2 Pro. Which is also another area that we didn't get a chance to. We didn't really do comparison because Oppo doesn't exist in the US as much.
Not really. Yeah.
I had the opportunity to play with it, and I can see what the premium version of a OnePlus is. Mm-hmm. Once you see what Oppo does, and once you see what ColorOS 11 did in it. But short answer for me was And not to say that there's anything wrong with the V60, and as far as the device, I actually still use it just without the SIM. It's on my desk, and this is where my multitasking comes in. Right. I like to have, the functions that you get with the V60, especially for gaming, that controller function cannot be replicated. Not that I don't like controllers. On the go, I could just literally open it up, connect to a hotspot from my phone, and I'm ready to go.
I want it on the wing. I want a custom controller on that little screen on the wing so you can have a Game Boy style controller for...
Absolutely.
Screen and landscape.
Those functions. So for me, those are the devices I've carried the most. The S20 mostly because I think at the time I set it up, it was more the where I keep my banking application. So there's a certain, I have a philosophy in the way I approach devices. There's my device that I put my banking apps and my certain applications that need to consistently stay. And I don't play around with that device because that device, once I'm done with the review or the process that I'm doing on it, it just literally becomes that, you know, that's the one I do take care of normal daily things, not work. The Find X2 Pro carried my SIM for the longest and it still has my SIM in it. I actually did have to put it back in there. It's just that good of a phone. And I don't miss wireless charging. I don't know why I can say that, but the short answer is for me, I think if I had to do any other device, would be the V60 because of the how good it is. I take a lot of B-roll footage with this. I use it a lot for controls. So it doesn't have a SIM, but it does still work. I mean, it's on my desk. It's not in a box somewhere. That's the philosophy I'm trying to say. It's on my desk.
What would also be, say, like one of the bigger surprises that you found this year, looking at all of the various different phones, especially like, you know, the OnePlus sort of shotgun approach?
The OnePlus was a big surprise this year. Their approach to smartphones changed yet again. I was very happy to see that they have a premium version of their phones. The OnePlus 8 Pro for me truly feels like the premium OnePlus. That device that you want all of the OnePlus features in, wireless charging, reverse wireless charging, fast charging, all of those things, and then still get Oxygen OS 11, released on it in beta. All of the things that I wanted to see out of a OnePlus, I feel like the OnePlus 8 Pro embodies that. The approach to devices in this year with the 8T and then there's the 8, I felt like it was slightly different. I wasn't used to seeing them releasing I'm not going to say a mid-tier because they're technically all running the 865, but right. At the end where we normally see the T line being more of a minimal increase in specs, this became more of a, like almost a wedge. So it's 8, 8T, 8 Pro, and the 8 Pro was the biggest surprise. It's extremely well refined. The experience is really smooth, very fast. Cameras are a lot better than what most people think they are. So,
if anyone who slept on the OnePlus 8 Pro camera, again, if you only looked at the reviews from that embargo launch week and you didn't follow up on some of the significant improvements that OnePlus made to
cameras,
you're sitting there with a Note 20 Ultra, 108 megapixel camera. Not really. It's a 12 megapixel camera.
Pixel blending. Exactly. It produces 12 megapixel camera images, and you are able to use the full sensor, but
the raw files pump out 12 MP.
Yep.
The raw files will not put out 108 MP because it is a non-tracell. It's a 9-grid. And it's a little bit bigger than the sensor that's in the OnePlus 8 Pro. Yeah. I see no functional advantage to using a 9-pixel sub-pixel binning over a 4-sub-pixel pixel binning. And the surface area is reasonably close, so you end up with very similar depth of field. And for the first year ever, if you're really looking at like Samsung's annoying auto HDR where you can never tell it just always make the photos HDR. I like OnePlus's HDR color processing better for the first time.
I've gotten a lot better.
Still some camera jank. I mean, it's OnePlus. We can always expect some gremlins in a OnePlus camera app, but the actual output, I feel OnePlus actually is delivering a better, not on the OnePlus 8, not on the OnePlus 8T, but on that OnePlus 8 Pro. That to me is the HDR performer of the year. It is just a gorgeous sensor.
A lot closer to each other when it comes to the optics. I think the real difference is when you go to the Pro.
Real quick, I just want to plug this in here before I kind of start wrapping this up, because I know you're going to have to get going here pretty soon too. Joe Hickey threw in a super chat that I missed in the Restream chat. The Restream sort of got weird with the YouTube chat. And Joe Hickey says, talking of Duo, you guys are the best. Just had to note that down. So we got an amazing collection of dad puns there.
Oh my God.
And again, also for any of you, and I so apologize because Restreams got weird with the YouTube chat. If I missed any other super chats or super stickers in there, again, super appreciate those of you that are sticking with us for this kind of rambly, gadgety, nerdy conversation and are supporting production on both of our channels. I think my biggest surprise of 2020, and a phone that I was really anxious about but ended up liking way better, was the Wing. I really felt like Wing was going to be one of these kind of compromised experiments. And the more I use it, it's not a broad recommendation. It's not like I'm telling my mom and dad, hey, go get Wings because they're really nifty. But for what LG is claiming to do with this new Explorer program is so much fun that there's a Oh, TK, what doing a super sticker while we're in the stream?
I had to throw it in. I totally forgot. Like, in my mind, I was going to do it.
I bought you, like, a $3 cup of coffee. You don't have to, like, super sticker.
So now I got 17. No, just kidding.
All right. You've got 4 more cups of coffee coming your way, and then maybe also a croissant.
Please. So, Swiss cheese, please. But thank you.
So I was really surprised by that. But I think also one of the – it's a much quieter story. It's something we should keep our eyes on. The company that I really hope to see iterate is TCL.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
We haven't seen this ODM story since HTC. You know, like, they made phones for other brands and other labels, and now they're kind of stepping out of the shadows to put their label more front and center. And 3 phone releases this year that I felt really did nail what they were claiming to put out there. Budget conscious, budget friendly devices with some fun video and streaming features. Respectable camera performance, respectable UI performance, but price tags that great really display, felt like you were getting a good displays. Bargain.
The TCL heritage, that their display technology that it comes through, that's a big factor. Every one of these devices had massive displays. Even the 250 model, the 10L, still had a massive display. So you have to appreciate what they're bringing in. And if they do end up materializing or making those concepts that we saw earlier in the year, because we saw a foldable. I don't know if you had a chance to see some of those pictures. They are doing work on foldables. I had a chance to play with it. Our PR guy back when we were in CES, I went in there, and it was before I went to the show floor, and basically nobody could touch it anymore.
Yeah.
It was fun. It is fun to see them.
Again, we were kind of talking about this on the Discord, and I don't have any inside knowledge here, so I'm totally speculating out of my rear end here. I'd be kind of surprised if there isn't some future licensing or collaboration between TCL's scrollable hinges and scrollable tech and LG's rollable displays.
They are very similar. Yeah.
Knowing that LG is going to be leaning on some ODMs next year for some of their phones, that to me sounds like a partnership that would make a lot of sense, so that both companies aren't reinventing the wheel. LG display tech is great, especially for bendy OLEDs, and no one has been more visible than TCL for these fold up and scrolling. So close this out. 2020 has probably been one of the most exciting years to talk about phones and experiments. Absolutely. I mean, we've got Sony's in the mix in ways that we've never seen them, and we haven't seen them in years past, at least not since the XZ. What do you think might be one of the next things that you would want to see addressed for phones in 2021? Because for me, it's not horsepower. I know we're supposed to be getting ridiculously powerful processors. We already have ridiculously powerful processors.
I think the 865 bridged, the improvements that we saw with the 865 were very well noted. And I realized that the 865 and the 765 changed the landscape a little bit for us. Everybody's able to get the 865. The 765 raised the bar for mid-range now that you're able to see what the performance is. The Pixel 5 is a perfect example of what you can.
When he freezes, I'm trying to do like a funny face to freeze with him.
So you froze for a second. Hey, you're back. No, you were frozen like this. And then.
I just lost your audio. So I don't know what you just said there. Give it just a second. You're going to come back. I see the little, I see there's like a little network indicator here on my screen.
I see it too.
So if it's not horsepower, and we got this year was great for experiments, folding phones, dual display phones, swivel hinges, and some interesting accessories. What do you think carries us into 2021? Because I feel if consumers see another round of Samsungs and iPhones that are kind of just the same as they've been for the last couple of years, but a little bit more powerful, to me, that is going to be a very disheartening. It's going to be a demoralizing effect on the smartphone ecosystem. And it's not to say that I don't think it's not worth it to buy a phone with $1,000. To me, it's finding the right phone where $1,000 makes sense.
Yep.
And if consumers are sort of burnt out with these same as they ever were incremental gadgety upgrades, especially from Apple. To me, that puts a chilling effect on the whole rest of the industry for what could be an exciting follow-up to the fun that we've had in 2020.
It's a little bit hard for us to see, kind of like, it's a like if you're trying to basically read the tea leaves here or trying to do some predicting, my thing would be realistically more is improving the functions of certain things and making them better. But that incremental change, which it's almost certainly we're going to see, obviously, Samsung's going to be the first device to carry the 875, whatever the new chipset's going to be. Mm-hmm. Under many, many, many years, they have almost like right off the bat kind of a embargo for some reason. Like, I think one thing that I haven't seen from last year to this year that I would wish to see is the improvements in the fingerprint sensor that the 865 was supposed to bring with it.
Yeah,
that almost all entire bottom part of your display being a fingerprint sensor, where you no longer need that. I have to look at the light and finger and put in.
We were teasing that back with the 855.
Yeah. I saw some hands-on demo with that when I was at the Qualcomm Summit last year. That never materialized. Of all the things they talked about, that was the one thing that I was really looking forward to seeing. So that type of technology is what I want to see come in 2021. It's not just the incremental changes, but it's truly like changing the experience. Folding displays are becoming more durable. They're becoming better, as we saw with what Samsung did with the Z Fold 2. They learned a lot from the first generation and the mistakes that went through. And you can see the improvements. You can feel the improvements when you're using it on the daily. So for me, those are the things I want to see. I definitely feel like foldable technology or dual display technology are going to be the way to go. I think we're going to shift into that realm to make it more usable. We saw a lot of the devices like the Mi Mix Alpha, where it had that folding display all the way on the outside part of it. That was more of a demo. But we see that Surface is there. I want to see a second Surface. I want to see what Microsoft can do to improve it to give us a better...
They're going to have to make it a little thicker. I mean, as much as I love this radical form factor.
Or as long as they're able to give us the improvements that we want.
Yeah.
I really like the size of the Duo is a big part of why I liked it, because it was so thin in our mind, or at least in my mind, it's like, it shouldn't be this smooth of a hinge. It shouldn't be this resilient or durable when I'm holding it in my hand. Because when I first held it, I was like, am I going to break it? Nope. Dude, flip, boom, boom, put it in. After a couple of days, my muscle memory kicks in. So now, those are the things.
Unfortunately, do you think we've gotten a bit of a sneak peek with Apple's A14 as to what 2021 might look like? Because, you know, Apple's not known for putting in the biggest batteries. In fact, they're known for putting in kind of just barely adequate batteries, especially on their more medium-sized phones.
Yep.
They're not super into fast charging tech.
No.
They kind of hinge their performance around a 30-watt charger which is not included. And everyone's going to copy, even though Samsung made fun of them this year. They are going 5G. They're not going high refresh rate. So we're already seeing those glimpses of Apple's new beastly processor sapping battery life, 5G sapping battery life. And I mean, we saw like Tech Tablets was doing performance testing and seeing like thermal throttling on iPhones, because like, there's just so much you can do with this.
It's the first time they've released this type of combination. I think 5G and the improvements with the A14 were too... I think that also kind of attributes to the fact why we didn't get a high refresh rate, because that would have just literally nuked your battery in 2 seconds at that point.
They got a bunch of positive headlines like, oh, Apple gave us 20% more battery. And you're like, neat, 5G is going to eat up 30% more battery day to day. So you're actually working way worse on an iPhone this year, if you're lucky enough, privileged enough to be living in 5G.
If you're in a 5G, let alone a UW 5G, which is an even other conversation. I think what we've seen, what Apple's done, is that it's solidified the 5G moniker. I think if anything else, I'm not going to deny the brand power that Apple has with iPhone when they do attribute to a device. When they brought wireless charging took off much faster.
Yeah, we know that. But I mean, to kind of piggyback on that idea, and sorry, because I don't want to run you way longer But just to close out with this idea, do you feel, we know that the 875 is going to have that massively huge performance core. We know Samsung is playing with a new multi-core arrangement for the next version of the Exynos.
Yep.
Do you think that this is also going to take us in a similar direction? We've got a lot of comments in here saying, hey, man, we need to work on battery technology. We need to improve runtime. 5G is still going to be a separate modem. It's not on the chipset. Specs nerds are still going to demand high refresh rate displays. And now we've got mega cores to power these like faster experiences that no one can really demonstrate why they want it. I mean, people mock me when I say like, hey, I render 4K video on my phone. Who would want to do that?
Well, I can tell you this much. Everything I have is set to 4K 60. I don't shoot in 1080. I'm like, even if I produce 1080.
So do you think that now that Samsung, Apple has kind of led the start of the next year of phones with the A14, do you think that's what we're going to be in for? I worry that our improvements are actually going to be real world deficits when we staple all of these technologies together and we haven't fundamentally solved the next gen battery.
No, and I think a lot of people are not focusing on the battery at all. I think the battery, although we've seen more devices with larger batteries, but truly battery health, battery charging, and even just the overall just optimizations for battery usage hasn't really been, you know, dead center. It was at one point. We did go through an iteration of device of upgrades where batteries were becoming more of a focus, and then we shifted back to the SoC. I think Apple's approach to the A14 this year and what they're trying to do with the improvements with the new architecture that they're trying to bring in may not translate right away to Android. I think it takes a little bit longer for it to hit because, as you can imagine, upgrade cycle, the development cycles are actually gone through a much longer process. Yeah. So what we see with the A14, if it succeeds, if Apple's able to somehow work out a software update process to be able to fix these concerns, because they're going to have to live with this for a year, at least for the new iPhone. I think the 875, if it behooves the 875 to move into the new architecture, my hope is that we do go into 5 nanometers, more optimizations and better power, less power consumption and more performance that we want to get out of the 875. And what we saw with Kirin, with they moved to the 5 nanometer, Apple moved to the 5 nanometer.
Yeah.
So I think it's the time where Snapdragon or Qualcomm can really flex that Qualcomm muscle And my hope is that I also say one step behind. Qualcomm's had a lot longer time to work with 5G and different approaches to 5G, either in an independent X55 or an X52 or an integrated modem. That gives them a little bit more of a leg up as opposed to what we've seen from Apple, because Apple's doing this for the first time. They're approaching it for the first time, and rightfully so, doesn't make sense for them to go high refresh rate and 5G and the new A14 architecture with the battery that they have right now. It would have just totally killed their experience.
Yeah.
We already know iPhones don't have long batteries. That was something people know when you buy it.
Let me tell you about how frequently I'm recharging my iPhone SE, just covering the basics. My prediction, because I'm kind of with you. I'm hoping that what we see is refinement, and then I don't necessarily need 2021 to be as experimental a year as we got here in 2020. I hope these experiments continue.
I would love to have that. The bigger fingerprint sensor, that needs to happen.
And some other, you know, whether or not it's rapid battery charging tech or just larger batteries, blah, blah, blah. My cranky pants prediction is combining all of these spec sheet nerd bullet points in 2021 will probably result in a poorer premium tier experience than what we had this year in 2020. Mm-hmm. But we're going to see the trickle down effect for significantly more powerful mid-ranger tech, the next generation of the 700 series CPUs.
Absolutely.
I think this will be the year Qualcomm kind of snaps on that, where they can't keep throwing 760s at Apple A13s in the mid-range and acknowledging like, well, some of these compromises, price performance, the heavy lifting scenarios, the gaming scenarios, AR, neural core, all of this stuff. I think the pickup, I really feel, and I hope I'm wrong, but I really feel the mid-ranger experience, the real world, use it in real life experience, is actually going to be better on mid-rangers than on the premium tier next year.
Absolutely. I'm totally with you. And I think that's what the 7 Series did for us this year. It showcased the capabilities.
It was a big step in the right direction. Yeah.
Yeah. And you saw And it, but it was almost kind of like the first, you know, the beginning of the year was 865, everything 865. You barely even saw the 7 series. And then middle of the year hit, and then you got the floodgates of 7 series. Mm-hmm. You got the 730, the 765, and then now we're also hearing that there's going to be the new 6 series. There's a lot of different things that Qualcomm's trying to do that offers us a better mid-range experience, which I feel like it realistically, again, for what we do on an average day, we're not being like either super productive in the sense of producing 4K content or trying to do things to that effect. I think the 7 series is a very capable chipset. And again, if there's any better example, the Pixel 5 is a 7 series. Google's going with their offering for 2021 for 2020 through most of 2021 is a 7 series, not an 8 series. And they're doing great. The photography, I mean, honestly, that we didn't lose a thing with photography. And of course, we got the lens that we wanted.
And I mean, it competes really well, spec for spec, against an iPhone 12 with a bigger battery and a higher refresh rate display and the same similar camera sensors. Remember, it's a deal breaker if Google uses last generation camera sensor, but it's totally fine to spend $200 more on an iPhone 12 to get the same camera sensors. That's okay because Apple, but Google did it, and that's naughty and bad. All right. So that last little bit of salt, that last little bit of snark, we should probably wrap this up. TK, thank you so much for joining. And also just like, man, these conversations are too infrequent. I feel like we should probably look at opportunities. I don't know if anyone in the chat would want to hang out with more regular kinds of conversation, podcast style chat.
Absolutely. I love these conversations, and I feel like you're right. We don't get a chance to hang out as much. And I appreciate these little collaborations that we do because we tend to be like, you know, we're talking, we're hanging out, we're doing a whole bunch of stuff. So I personally would like it. I would love it. And I would be open to see what people are thinking about it and
feeling like you'd like to join us on these types of more regular kinds of conversations, maybe audio downloadable, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what you guys are into. Drop some comments, hit us up on social media, let us know what the deal is. But where can folks catch you around the internet's, TK, and what might you have primed and ready for this next week of gadgety discussion?
So this easy way to find me is TK Bay, as the name says. I'm actually not even sure where it says it. Just TKBAY all over the internet. Just type it in. And then I always say this is let the beard guide you. Once you see the logo, you know who it is. Because I'm not gonna even going to say TKDSL, because I think if you just look for TK Bay, you'll find me. As far as videos coming up this week, I have a couple of good ones. A gaming review on the Mate 40 Pro. I'm working on putting a gaming experience on the new Kirin 9000. But the big video that I want to push out that I'm finishing the edits on is the Galaxy Z Fold 2 versus the Duo, which I know we're not part of our conversation most of it. But to me it's a device that I carry, and of course the Duo is also offering us a bigger landscape, an 8.1 inch display as opposed to a 7.6. So short answer, that video is coming out very soon. And
no, we were so close to sticking the landing. Come on. Come back to me, TK. Come back.
I should be back now.
So yeah, we tapped out on just the tail end of that, but you've also been doing some fun gaming coverage, and you've been sort of game streaming and stuff. So there's plenty to catch. TK Bay, TKDSL 8655 on this.
Yep.
I've got some wrap up videos that are going to be coming out. Especially looking at OnePlus 8T, which I feel deserves a little bit of attention after living with it for a while. LG Wing, kind of a longer term wrap up.
And the Wing for me too. I forgot. Sorry, that's also coming.
There's a lot going on. So definitely some follow up conversations there. We didn't take a pause to plug the subreddit, but please check out reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles.
Yes,
where a huge community, a building community, is starting to really share content from creators they feel deserve more attention. And again, don't leave it up to YouTube. Don't leave it up to Facebook. Algorithms aren't your friends. If you really want to see broad gadget, real world tech conversations, That Reddit is becoming one of my favorite places to lurk and find new stuff. And I'm finding really cool stuff on the regular.
I love it.
Just to wrap us up. And again, thank you so much for everyone who's been contributing. I know I missed a super chat in there. I think Matt Tyler even sent us a super sticker, super chat. And I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. I just have to reiterate, if you're in the United States, go vote. Do it. Be a part of a conversation. Contribute to this discussion. Use this, hobby of yours. You know more than a lot of the people that are trying to write legislation on this stuff. Be active. Don't let other people decide for you what technology should look like. Contribute and get off the sidelines, because we kind of need more people actively participating in these kinds of discussions. So on that note, thank you so much. Catch both of us around the web, on the social medias, on the YouTubes, on the Twitches, etc., etc. I want y'all to have an amazing week with your technology. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I'll catch you back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Take care. Be well. I'll catch you back.
Take care, everybody.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs, is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.